dribbles, cutting in, shoots, scores! They've slain the dragon!
Daniel. Henrik. Back for Daniel.
Let's it go, he scores!
10 seconds left of the power play. Here's Hughes, top the point, shoots and scores! Come all without, come all within. You've not seen nothing like the mighty Quinn. Back to Pettersson. Can't find a lane, wants to shoot, goes back to Miller, side of the goal, then to the line for Hughes. Hughes back to Pettersson, wanted a one-timer, pass was in his skates, he settles it down, throws it for the goal, stopped by Bebo, Bebo, they score! It's Brock Besser at the side of the net! Pettersson's released from the box, Vancouver's back to even strength, but the Blue Jackets still have it in the zone. Boone Jenner with a pass through the middle, goes all the way down the ice, here's Pettersson after it, he's got a chance at a breakaway. Pettersson in clean, is tripped by Murray, but he scores! Pete comes out of the box and puts the puck into the back of the net.
It's time for Sportsnet Tonight with Jamie Dodd on Sportsnet 650, the home of the Canucks.
What's going on, Vancouver? It is Sportsnet Tonight. It is a Halloween edition of Sportsnet Tonight. Roger Shergill with you here on Sportsnet 650 alongside Josh Elliot Wolf. A very happy early Halloween to all of our listeners today, and we wish you are well and healthy, and whatever your plans for Halloween, we hope that you guys are able to execute them safely. Josh, because it is a Halloween edition of Sportsnet Tonight, I want to get a little spooky. I think we're in the Halloween spirit today.
I hope so.
I know I am. I know you're wearing a costume.
Yeah. What?
Nudist on strike.
Yes. You nailed it.
Exactly. I do want to talk about some of the fears that we have, some of the scary things now that it's Halloween is upon us in just a day, technically in about 4 or 5 hours' time. That's when all the ghosts come out. So I want to ask you, Josh, and I want to ask all of our listeners, 650, 650 is the text message inbox. What are you afraid of? It's a very deep question.
Yeah. Yeah. You can get really deep with it, too.
Oh, yeah.
Man, like, life? That's pretty scary.
I'm scared of a lot of things, Josh, I will tell you. But I'm not necessarily talking about life. More so talking about in relation to sports and in relation to the National Hockey League. And more importantly, the local team here, the Vancouver Canucks. If we're being honest, and if I had to tell you one thing that I'm afraid of, there's a lot of things to be afraid of when it comes to the NHL. Right now, there's one thing I think a lot of people are scared of a little bit is the uncertainty surrounding the National Hockey League and when exactly it's going to come back, and when it does come back, how it's going to look. And when it comes to the Vancouver Canucks, I think a lot of people's answers are going to be surrounding the salary cap. Canucks, of course, don't have a whole bunch of money. But as we get closer and closer to the season, there's going to be a little bit more clarity as to what exactly is going to happen with the salary cap. So to me, salary situation is not exactly something that haunts me, I don't think.
Yeah, it's not necessarily a big fear because, you know, the team has ways of getting under the cap before the season. I am scared that they can't do more because of the cap, but the cap itself does not.
I think the real scary thing is what's going to happen in a couple of years down the road when Pettersson and Quinn Hughes need to be extended, and then more so after that, the other contracts that are going to be coming off the books. But now we're really looking 2 years or 3 years in advance. Of course, the Pettersson and Hughes thing is just the following season, but when it comes to really trying to make this team into a contender, some people already seem to be worried a couple of years in the future, thinking that, hey, because of the cap situation today, that's going to allow the Canucks to, or that's not going to allow the Canucks to be, be able to cash in necessarily on certain players, and that could impact their Stanley Cup window. I'm not necessarily there yet when it comes to fear about that.
Yeah, it's tough because you never know what's going to happen in that year or two, and you never know who's going to be acquired, who's going to leave, who's going to retire. What we do know, for the most part, is that all of the dead money, whether it be Erickson or Sutter or Beagle or Vercel or whoever you deem aside from Myers, maybe an anchor contract is a popular term. We do know all of those players will be off in a year or two. So reallocating that money to Pettersson and Hughes is a lot better than having that money tied up in the bottom six.
Exactly. And you know what? The Canucks, in my opinion, are well on their way to be contenders. And it might not happen this season. I think that was something that a lot of people were worried about, that, hey, the fact that the Canucks are not able to add this year is something that's going to be a black mark on GM Jim Benning's book. And yeah, I think it might be. I think it probably is. The fact that, you know, this is a team that's 5 years into a rebuild now, and at a time in which you get a superstar center iceman and a superstar defenseman, and you pair them up with guys like Brock Besser and Bo Horvat and JT Miller and whoever else it might be, the time is now. You can definitely make that argument now to really cash in. But the reality of the situation is the Canucks aren't in a position to do that. Now, depending, like I mentioned off the top of the show, what happens in the summer, once the season begins, is really going to dictate that. Right, and whether Michael Forlan goes on LTIR, which to me seems like it's becoming more and more of a possibility.
Yeah, you do have to think that, like, the Canucks have kind of put themselves in a position where they have to almost be banking on that. You know what I mean? Like, they have to have the knowledge of, hey, we think this guy is probably going to be going to LTIR, but if not, he can help out in our lineup.
Exactly. And so the biggest thing I think that I was critical of this offseason for the Canucks, and what kind of scared me coming into it, now that we're on the, you know, the Halloween spooky theme, talking about what's scaring us about the Vancouver Canucks offseason, what's kind of scared me was the fact that, is this team going to be able to move money? And they haven't been. And I think that's been a really bad thing when it comes to what's happened with the Vancouver Canucks. But, like, regardless of that, the need for, you know, moving money out, despite acquiring defenseman Nate Schmidt for an extremely discounted rate, like, that remains a priority.
For sure. And you see around the league that that's been really tough everywhere for the most part. There were a couple moves involving Detroit and Ottawa, but those moves have been made, and now they don't necessarily need to do that to reach the cap floor unless you're giving up a significant asset with whoever you're sending away.
Exactly. And, you know, when it comes to getting, you know, turned off by a certain team situation, and in this case, the Vancouver Canucks situation, and you talk about the team being lateral and not really taking a step forward, that's, to me, isn't something that you should be afraid about. You know what I mean? Like, it's disheartening. It's upsetting, for sure. It's something, should the Canucks be in a better situation? 100%. I think everybody agrees with that. But talking about the fact that this is a team that, well, isn't taking a step forward next year, there's examples both ways. Hey, they might very well take a step forward next year, and I'm going to talk about that a little bit later on as well. And then they might not take steps forward based on the team and how it looks on paper. We know obviously, paper is not what decides hockey games, right? It's what happens really when they're on the ice.
Yeah, and like you said, of course, when you have young players, young stars, and Pettersson and Hughes, you expect every year that you're going to get better. And whether it be because of the flat cap, whether it be because of, like I mentioned earlier, the contracts that are kind of impacting the team, they might not be taking a step forward, but you can't ignore the fact that Pettersson is going to take another step, Hughes is going to take another step, and those are the guys that we're going to drive the bus anyway.
Yeah. When I talk about real spooky situations with the Canucks, though, there is one thing that does freak me out a little bit going into next season. And there is a difference to me when it comes to regressing because of the players that you already have on the team taking up roster spots, taking up too much money. The fact that guys like Brandon Sutter and Jay Beagle and Antoine Roussel and Louis Erickson are on this team, taking up not only roster spots, but that doesn't really matter too much based on the fact that who are they really going to bring up right now. And also, but more so the fact that those contracts are not allowing them to add. But if the team regresses because of that, that's kind of expected. right? Like, we hope based on, or the Canucks hope, I should say, based on adding Schmidt and just hoping that Pedersen and Hughes take another step, the regression shouldn't happen. And that's what GM Jim Benning is going to tell you, that it shouldn't happen, or players should take a step forward regardless. But what really freaks me out is what happens if certain players do not progress as if they're supposed to. And there's a couple of guys that come into mind, but I'll start with one of the main ones, and that's in goal, Thatcher Demko. He had a fantastic few games in the bubble against the Vegas Golden Knights. In the regular season, he wasn't bad, wasn't great. It was all right. He's a young goalie playing in a backup role. And now, though, going into next season, it's really his show. Like, Demko time, Josh, is no longer a hashtag. It's no longer something you put on the back of your mask. It's reality going into next season. And I know Braden Holtby is there, but let's be clear. Like, we knew if the Vancouver Canucks were going to get rid of Jacob Markstrom, which to me looked like a long shot, but if they did get rid of Markstrom, then of course the goaltender that they were going to sign was going to be an experienced backup. I never necessarily thought it was going to be Braden Holtby. I didn't really think Braden Holtby was going to take a backup type position. I thought he was going to get a whole lot more money, a little bit more term. I was looking at a guy like maybe Thomas Greiss. But regardless of the fact that the type of goalie and the type of role that Braden Holtby is playing is simply of a mentorship type role, and really just help steady the boat whenever he needs to, whenever Demko might need a little bit of a rest. So if Demko, for whatever reason, is not able to take a step forward next year and really show that he is a starting caliber goaltender, then I think that's something that does worry me a little bit.
Yeah, and that's a fair worry. I do think Holtby was brought in under the assumption that, like, hey, it's going to be a shortened season. It's not going to be the traditional backup role that we're used to seeing, especially with last year. Like, Demko isn't going to play the same percentage of games that Markstrom played last year. I hope he does, because that must mean he's progressed to a point where he can handle that. But Holtby is a really good insurance option. And obviously, he had a bad year last year, but he's in a position where he has a lot to prove, and he's only on a two-year contract, and if he has a solid 2 years, I don't think he's lined up for a big contract after that, but he could get a three-year deal that at least gets him to retirement, right? So there's something in it for Holtby to be that guy for Demko and also step in if Demko does falter. And you can't ignore Ian Clark's effect on goalies and how he just revitalizes careers and helps them progress to where they need to go.
Yeah, and that's a good point, because Ian Clark is sort of the wild card in all of this, right? When it comes to the goaltending situation. When you look at the point that I just made about Thatcher Demko potentially faltering off, and I'm not saying that I'm not confident in Demko. That's not what I'm saying. I fully 100% expect Thatcher Demko, especially in an era of goaltending, Josh, where there's no longer the star goalie. Like, how many star goaltenders really are there in the NHL now, right? Like, I think of Carey Price. You could put Andrei Vasilevskiy in that point.
Yeah, John Gibson.
Sure.
Hellebuck. Yeah, there's maybe max 5 to 10.
I don't think that there's even 5. And, you know, so my point of view is in an era where the star goalie is no longer really a thing, I think Thatcher Demko has the ability to be a star. So I'm not worried about him regressing, and I'm not worried about him not taking the next step. I'm confident he's going to be able to figure it out. The question, though, is that going to be next year? And is that going to be a situation in which the Canucks look at their goaltending depth a few games into the season and say, you know what, this guy might not be ready to carry the load for a handful of games in a row? And playing these many minutes, especially when you're talking about travel being involved. I know we're talking about a Canadian division, but there's still travel, more so than there was in the bubble, of course. So it's going to be a different situation. Now, listen, he's an NHL, he's a professional goalie. He's done the travel. He's done the work. The difference now is it's in an NHL level, and it's at a more consistent level. So, yeah, the Ian Clark argument of him being great is fantastic. That's fine. But the fear and, you know, the scared, I guess, that the Canucks fans might feel about particular players falling off, at least for the following season, to me, is still a question or a conversation that has a little bit of merit because, you know, Demko's not the only guy. Like, and like I mentioned, if your team or if the Canucks aren't progressing based on not being able to add because of anchor contracts, that's one thing. But to not be able to do that if a guy like Demko or JT Miller or Brock Besser or whoever it might be are not able to pick up their game or keep their game in the sense of JT Miller to the level that it was last year, that's a little bit of a concern, and that's not the way that the Canucks should be regressing.
No, yeah, you don't want to regress from within in your star players. Like, you expect it from Beagle and Sutter for sure, and guys of that ilk, and they're still going to be serviceable, but they're not going to get better than they were last year. But yeah, and Miller is a really interesting player to me because, look, he came over, he had success with Pettersson, and to be fair, Pettersson is going to create success for a lot of players, but Miller, it was a symbiotic relationship. Miller was helping Pettersson, Pettersson was helping Miller. And his play doesn't necessarily, like, there was nothing about his play last year that led to a potential regression. And of course that is a fear because he had a career year last year. You can't expect that every season. But hey, like, Besser still probably has more to give. And if Miller does fall off a little bit, maybe Besser can pick that up as well.
I like what you said there about how Pettersson helps Miller and Miller helps Pettersson and vice versa. And yeah, like, Pettersson's the type of player, like, and I'm a believer of this, that any player can play on a line with Elias Pettersson and Brock Besser and be a contributor and probably score 20 goals and 40 points. Like, I'm a true believer of that.
Yeah, I could probably pick up a few goals.
I think so.
Yeah.
I think you can. And, like, you know, like, we look at, I think a great example of this is Patrick Maroon, right? Scores 30 goals when he was with Edmonton. And look who he's playing beside.
Yeah.
And, again, I'm not trying to say that that's what happened to JT Miller, because, matter of fact, I think it's the opposite. Yeah, Pettersson is able to help other players reach that level of play, but I don't believe that that's necessarily what happened with JT Miller. I think JT Miller, for the Vancouver Canucks last season, drove play. He retrieved pucks. He was skating hard. He was creating plays. He was in the right spot to find goals and to actually bury the goals. He wasn't necessarily just in and around the net trying to tap home garbage goals. Nothing wrong with that, but that's not the type of player that he is. He was actually in high danger scoring chances, like the faceoff dot, trying to take one-timers, right on the power play, making creative plays. JT Miller wasn't a player that was a beneficiary necessarily of Elias Pettersson, and that's it. He was a guy that was actually contributing to that line, and a line that got a name, the 649 line, because of how well JT Miller was playing. And you know, we talked so much about Brock and Pettersson being that dynamic duo on that line. I think last year, how good JT Miller was, he was kind of the second man on that line.
Yeah, and that's why you saw Besser going back and forth between playing with Horvat, playing with Pettersson, because, and no offense to Besser, I think he still has a lot of room to grow, and I think he has changed his game. He's been more sound defensively. He has been a better player than his numbers suggest, I guess. Like, there's talk of this fall off from his rookie season that I just don't think is a legit thing. But yeah, you definitely look at Miller and Pettersson as like, okay, those are the first line guys, and Besser is probably going to play on that wing. But like we saw at the end of last year, Toffoli can play in that, and obviously he's not with the team anymore, but you can find other wingers to pair with those guys and they still look solid. So I agree with you. Besser, he's a great player, but he's not necessarily the partner to Pettersson like we thought he was.
Yeah, like, I think he's going to have, like you mentioned, the start there. And he's pegged in for that role. But that's, I think, a dynamic duo of Pettersson and Miller. And Brock's the guy that they can look to move elsewhere. And that's a good thing for Brock too, right? Like, you don't have to look at it as necessarily a negative. It's a player that Travis Green, at least the way he's probably going to tell the media, is that He's versatile, and he can play everywhere in the lineup. And that's good because Bo Horvat could use a winger, right?
Yeah.
So he gets that help, and it's good in the sense for the Canucks when you have that sort of depth on your wing. The problem with Tyler Toffoli leaving is now you don't necessarily have all that depth.
For sure, and that was the main concern for me of the offseason was – And this kind of plays into the spooky thing. I'm scared to see who the winger in the top six will be. Because right now it's Virtanen, and that scares me a little bit. And going into the offseason, if you had told me all three of Markstrom, Tanev, and Toffoli would be leaving, I would have been like, man, this team is going to look a lot different next season. And look, Markstrom and Tanev were definitely justified, especially with the price they got. But Toffoli, I still think, is a player that should have been kept at that number, and obviously there's more that goes into it with the potential for that Ekman-Larsson trade, and I think that's why Virtanen got the qualifying offer. But yes, it's going to be really interesting to see who can kind of step up and fill that right wing top six role, and Virtanen might be the guy, but we kind of know what we're getting in him at this point.
It's a spooky edition of Sportsnet tonight here. One day before Halloween, Roger Shergill, Josh Elliott Wolf with you here on Sportsnet 650. Those are the things that scare us, that bring fear to us as people that cover the Vancouver Canucks when it comes to that team. Josh, what's something, when you flip the question around, that is scary about the Canucks?
What's scary about the Canucks has to be, I'm going to go with the top pair, the potential top pair of Quinn Hughes and Nate Schmidt. And obviously we haven't seen them play together, and we haven't seen if they're even going to be paired together, but I do think that's an interesting option. Obviously Schmidt's a left-handed defenseman, but like we know, he plays the right side often. And I think Myers has been kind of put in that role prematurely. I don't know if he's going to end up there, but I really want to see that first pair of Schmidt and Hughes and just how offensively minded and how good they will be at puck moving. And we saw it with Tanev last year. Like, he's good defensively, but ideally you don't want to be in the defensive zone. That sounds obvious, but Schmidt is such a good player at getting the puck out of the zone and making that first pass. And obviously we know what Hughes can do as well.
Yeah, I agree with that. And I think that if I would want to see Nate Schmidt paired up with Quinn Hughes, because Nate Schmidt is used to playing a lot of big minutes, right? And Shea Theodore and Alec Martinez and a lot of those guys were not necessarily playing the heavy minutes for Vegas. It was Nate Schmidt who was put into those roles. And Theodore was a little bit sheltered, playing in more advantageous roles. And when you look at Schmidt now coming to the Canucks, and you look at what Quinn Hughes and the types of roles he was playing last year, he was kind of sheltered when it comes to the heavy minutes, when it comes to trying to protect the lead, right? And you saw Chris Tanev and Alexander Edler take a lot of that grunt work when it comes to really playing defensively. But now all of a sudden you get a guy who's used to playing those kinds of minutes, who's also very good offensively. He's very mobile, just like Quinn Hughes is. And now you're playing him alongside Quinn Hughes in a more matchup role and a more defensive role. And I don't think that a guy like Quinn Hughes' offensive game is going to be impacted if he plays in a situation like that. At the end of the day, this is the kind of guy that wants to, I think, get better at defending in his own zone as well. And that's going to help Quinn Hughes if he has Nate Schmidt playing alongside him. I think Alexander Edler, Tyler Myers as a pairing is, to me, that's a pretty decent second pairing. Especially when you've got a guy in Tyler Myers that's better at getting the puck out of their own zone. Because as we know, Tanev and Edler were not necessarily the strongest at doing that at this point in their career.
No, and we all know Tanev and Edler had big contributions in their prime to the team. And I think we got stuck on that a little bit. And last year, like, they were minute eaters, but they weren't the players they once were. And yeah, it's going to be really interesting to see how the defensive pairs shake out, especially with the loss of, look, it's pretty easy to substitute Schmidt for Tanev and be like, yeah, that's an upgrade. But the third pair is going to be where it gets interesting, and sticking with the spooky theme, that scares me a lot, that third pair, and how big of a fall-off it could be, and whether it is that big of a fall-off or not.
650-650 is a text message inbox. Tell us who or what scares you most about the Vancouver Canucks, especially in this offseason, and what is the most scary thing about the Vancouver Canucks? We're up against the clock here. I'll tell you what's the most scary thing from my point of view about the Vancouver Canucks at some point during this show. Text us your answers to that question. It is Sportsnet tonight here on Sportsnet 650. Coming up, Randeep Janda, host of Reach Deep. He's going to be joining us. And the OHL is reportedly ready to make one of the most mind-boggling decisions I've ever heard of. I'll tell you what that is. It's Sportsnet tonight. Roger Shergill, Josh Elliott Wolf on your home of the Canucks, Sportsnet 650.
You're listening to Sportsnet Tonight with Jamie Dodd.
It is Sportsnet Tonight, 7:32. Sportsnet 650, Roger Shergill alongside Josh Elliott Wolf. Josh, Bick Nizar would be absolutely disappointed in you.
Oh, I know. I have to, it's the J. Cole rule. I always have to remember that when I'm not doing a Bick show, it's okay to play J. Cole.
I've gotten rid of all of his songs out of my library. No longer am I allowed to play J. Cole on any show now because of what he has instilled into my brain.
Yeah, honestly, I forget, but like, man, he's got so many good instrumentals to come back with.
He's got great songs, but Bick Nizar doesn't like that, and whatever Bick says goes, man.
He's the boss.
He's the boss. He is. Back when, you know, pre-COVID and we used to get interns, and you and I were both interns at one point here at Sportsnet 650 as well, he is sort of the boss of the interns almost, right?
Yeah, he's definitely the guy, well, and I don't want to, like, discredit anybody else, but he was definitely the guy that I
don't want to pump his tires either.
So. Yeah, exactly. He was definitely the guy I went to when I was like, oh, man, I have questions. I got to go to Bick because I'm comfortable with Bick, and I know he's going to give me the right answer.
Bick's great, except for this extremely dumb rule, Bick.
Yeah, J. Cole's decent great. Enough to play.
That's... J. Cole's great. I think he's great. I think this rule is not so great, but you know what? Well, I'm over it. It's been a long time. I don't need to open up this can of worms anymore.
Yeah. Speaking of not-so-great rules, OHL, eh?
OHL. Yeah, so the Ontario Hockey League is apparently ready to make a rule for next season, and sort of preface this and, you know, say it with a grain of salt. It's not their doing. It is with the Ontario's Minister of Sport, Lisa McLeod, making the decision and making this rule, which to me is absolutely mind-boggling. It's going to be interesting to see what the OHL does with this. But the rule in place, and if you haven't heard, is this. Next season in the Ontario Hockey League, there will be no more body checking. You heard that right. No body checking in the Ontario Hockey League for next season. Now, as I mentioned, the OHL still needs to decide what they're going to do about this. They are not the ones who made this decision. It was the Minister of Sport, Lisa McLeod, and she's been very adamant about it on social media as well. She's confirmed it. She said multiple times that this is the way it's going to be. If the OHL wants to play hockey next season, no body checking whatsoever. And the reason for it is to prevent the spread of COVID-19. My biggest thing is, if you're afraid of spreading the virus because of close contact with players, don't play hockey. The league should not be happening if that's the reason. Because taking away body contact and body checking does nothing, in my opinion. You're still going to be having board battles along the boards and in the corners. Are players going to socially distance themselves when they're trying to get a puck in the corner? To me, it just doesn't make sense. We'll see how the OHL responds to Minister of Sport Lisa McLeod's statement earlier on today. It is Sportsnet Tonight. Roger Shergill alongside Josh Elliott Wolf joining us now on the line. He is Randeep Janda from Reach Deep. You can hear him 1 to 4 p.m. right here alongside Dan Riccio, also the host of Hockey Night in Canada, Punjabi. Randeep, what's going on, man? How are you?
What's going on, boys? This is strange. I'm 34 years old, and I think if I combine both of your ages, you guys are, what, 34, right?
I think so. I think Josh is, about 10.
I just turned 13, actually.
No, this is great, man. It's great to have you guys on air, and you guys are that next generation, and so it's great to hear your voices on air.
Thank you so much. Really appreciate that, Randeep. It's a Halloween edition of Sportsnet tonight. We're talking about what on the Canucks scares other teams next year. What is that one thing to you that other teams should be afraid about for the Canucks?
For me, that is actually the development of two, obviously prominent players, the two franchise players of this team, Quinn Hughes and Elias Pettersson. But I'm going to focus on Elias Pettersson because I think last year we saw how impressive of an all-around player he can be. We saw that in the playoffs. We saw that in the regular season as well, where the defensive side of the game, we started to see what everybody thought could be a possibility of, wait a second, remember those Datsyuk comparisons and the defensive side of the game where he had to improve? We saw development in that, and that's important. I think the Elias Pettersson growth, or hopefully the continued growth, should really scare teams because this is a guy, 66 points the last 2 years. Can he become that 85-point guy potentially next year? Can he, tease maybe around that 90-point range if they're playing a full 82? There's a couple of things to keep in mind there. What does the season look like? How many games do they play? Are there a lot in back-to-backs? But if you can, on a game-per-game average, start to trend towards those numbers of being a complete player, showing more defensively, and then all of a sudden, look at those individual offensive numbers. If you can up those, that's the thing I would say should scare teams the most is, divisional rivals. And Elias Pettersson continuing to grow, if he's 10% better, if he's 15% better, watch out, because I think we started to see that growth last year of, wait a second, we know he's got the offensive skill. He can do it defensively as well. Does he continue to grow? Does he continue to get more comfortable as he goes along here?
Yeah, as we know, that development isn't linear necessarily, but I think Quinn Hughes and Elias Pettersson don't follow those rules. I do expect them to get better, and that was actually my answer to that question as well. I want to flip it around, though, and ask, what is going to haunt the Canucks next season?
Okay, the scary thing about this lineup, and we've talked about this on Reach Deep, Dan Riccio is very optimistic. He's glass half full when it comes to the depth within the organization right now. I, on the other hand, am not too pleased about that. And that is really the scary thing to me. That's the thing that should spook you. I heard, a little bit early on, actually, Josh mentioned that, Jake Virtanen in that top six role. Yeah, that's scary. Listen, Jake Virtanen, for me, is a very good third-line player that can jump up if need be because of injury. He's a good player that if you need somebody in the top six to play either in the first or second line, that's the guy that you can say, all right, we need you there for maybe 5-10 games. But ideally, you're going to play on that third line where you might get offensive zone starts. Maybe you're playing with an Adam Gaudette. You're going to get some premium looks, and we want you to score goals. But the wing position, specifically that position, I'm not totally happy with. I think the Canucks don't have that depth. They've got a logjam of bottom six forwards, but outside of the guys that we know are going to play in the top six, which is Tanner Pearson, Brock Besser is going to be there, JT Miller, that fourth forward to me is lacking. And I would even go further. We had Guillaume Brisebois on the show today on Reach Deep. Looking at the bottom, the bottom pairing of defense, you can expect Jordy Benn to feature there because he's that veteran that can play on either the left or the right side. But you've got three options that you're essentially looking at right now to play the other role. And listen, Olja Levy, you're trending towards being a better player, but there's no slam dunk there. He's an option. You hope it pans out this year, but we'll have to see how he shows up to camp. Rogan Rafferty, very much the same. He's 25 years old, but we don't know what he is. And beyond that, Jalen Chatfield, good player, but is he NHL level? Do they have replacement level players for that third pairing? That, to me, the depth overall of this team is a thing that I think Canucks fans, as of right now, depending on what happens with Michael Ferland, depending what happens in the rest of free agency, right now that spooks me because I don't think they're a deep team.
Yeah, and Travis Green is definitely going to have to be a bit creative when it comes to filling out the rest of that lineup, especially my concern is the third pair. But as far as Travis Green goes, his name has been kind of coming up a lot recently. He only has 1 year left on that contract. I know Reach Deep is a big fan of worryometers. Should that be
on
going
brand.
Yeah, should it be going off a little bit right now, or is that premature?
No, I think it's premature at this point, because as you mentioned, he's got 1 year left. We haven't really started the year. It's not Barry Trotz and Washington levels of, wait a second, the year has started and this guy still doesn't have a contract. Is he a lame duck coach? No, he's not that as of right now. But one thing to watch right now that is important, and listen, there's a recent history of playing the waiting game, and it hasn't worked out for the Canucks, right? We saw that on the player front. Finances in any line of business are hurting right now. So if you're asking players to sit back and say, hey, we're figuring out our finances, hang tight. Players and coaches, for that matter, they're an asset. They're a commodity. Every star likes to be made to feel special, right? That's essentially what they do. They don't like waiting around. Hey, you and I, Josh, we can wait around. We're in the media. We're, you know, the average person can do that. But when you are a hockey player, when you're an athlete, waiting is not great. So we saw some players basically saying, hey, I'm going to look out for my dollar figure. I'm not waiting for you to circle back. And we saw the Canucks, whether it was the Troy Stecher deal, maybe even a Josh Levo deal, waiting was not something that those players wanted to do. And we definitely saw that with Chris Tanev. Obviously, with the coach, it's a little different. He's got another year left, but how long is Travis Green going to wait, right? As of right now, those negotiations aren't exactly moving along. Now, if we're having this conversation 2 or 3 months from now, then you're definitely taking out the worryometer. I think as of right now, it's not a situation you have to worry, but we're in uncharted, you know, territory right now with COVID and the pandemic and businessmen really looking out for their dollar figure. So if Travis Green, you know, I don't have any inside info on this, but if it's a term thing and he's looking for a 3-year extension and ownership is saying, yeah, we're not looking, we don't want to give anything beyond 1 or 2 years. Well, yeah. Hey, listen, if we're still talking about this in 2 or 3 months, then it's probably time to take out the worryometer. I'm not quite there yet, but it does kind of perk up your ears a little bit just to say, wait a second, this isn't exactly going as smooth as one would hope for.
Yeah, and how much do you think, like, this offseason we saw Toffoli, Markstrom, Tanev leave, and from a financial point of view, at least Markstrom and Tanev kind of make sense. But if you're Travis Green, you're like, hey, I just lost a top four defenseman and I lost my MVP goalie. Do you think the movement of players and whether they acquire or lose certain players, how much do you think that plays into him potentially considering other options after next season?
Well, okay, one thing with Travis Green was that this past year was the first year that he really had a solid roster to work with, right? Prior to this past year, the Canucks didn't maybe have that depth. So it definitely hurts, but this is where not having that flexibility from a cap perspective, the Louis Erickson contract still sitting there, Brandon Sutter still sitting there. Those things definitely hurt, but if you're a coach, your job is to bank on those guys, those young guys getting better. And listen, the Nate Schmidt deal I haven't mentioned yet, but that is going to be a huge, huge, like that's the story to me heading into this year, along with goaltending, is that with this new defenseman who can drive play better than Chris Tanev can, and it's a significant upgrade, can Travis Green play that style that he wants? He loves to push the pace. He loves to have his defenseman activate. So while we've seen Jacob Markstrom and a few others leave, that Nate Schmidt move to me is, in a lot of ways, if you're Travis Green, you're saying, that's exactly the defenseman I want. So, you know, while there have been important departures from that lineup, Travis Green, the way he likes to play, Nate Schmidt is a huge coup for him. So I wouldn't go that far to basically say, hey, you know, how much of an impact are those departures going to have? Because the way that Travis likes his guys to play and likes his team to play, Nate Schmidt works exactly into that style. And if I'm Travis Green, I'm probably pretty jacked about that.
It is Sportsnet Tonight. Roger Shergill alongside Josh Elliott-Wolf. Randeep Janda, our guest, you can hear on Monday to Friday from 1 to 4 p.m. alongside Dan Riccio here on Sportsnet 650 for Reach Deep. I want to switch over to the rest of the NHL, Randeep. Which team's offseason so far has impressed you the most?
Okay, so from a from a contender and a team that's just punching above their weight. Like, okay, let's start with the lowly teams, because I've actually liked some of the work that Ottawa and New Jersey have done. Like, Detroit. My mistake. New Jersey hasn't done anything. But Detroit, I like that they're picking up one-year deals, and they're rebuilding the proper way. Like, looking back at the way that the Canucks had built their roster and the way they'd kind of gone through a reset, Detroit has gone a different way altogether, saying, no, we're going to accumulate picks. And Steve Yzerman is being pretty ruthless in the way he's doing it. So from a team that was terrible last year, arguably one of the worst teams around, I actually like what Detroit has done, and they're slowly rebuilding. Now, everybody else, I've loved what Colorado's done. Picking up Devon Taves and that deal with the New York Islanders and signing him to a deal, like, they've rounded out their team, and they didn't go big game hunting for a Taylor Hall. Apparently, you know, the number that they were interested in was a lot lower, but they've kept their cap flexibility in a good spot moving forward. They got to pay guys like Cale Makar, but they also picked up players, and they took advantage of a team like the New York Islanders that needed to create cap space to sign Matt Barzal. So to me, Colorado, there's a reason they're the cup favorites for next year. If you look at the betting lines, it's based on the fact that they've done some very smart moves and they're taking advantage of teams. So I look at Colorado and they've got that star talent that they've always had, but that Devon Taves move, like, he was one of the Islanders' best defensemen in the playoffs, and that's just made Colorado that much better now.
Randeep Janda is our guest here on Sportsnet tonight. Roger Shergill, Josh Elliott-Wolf. There are still a number of free agents available, Randeep, that obviously a lot of teams can add, but we're talking about, from the Vancouver Canucks perspective here, more so, which free agent intrigues you the most?
The most intriguing has to be, still at this point, Mike Hoffman. Not necessarily from a Canucks perspective, but Hoffman's one of the elite snipers of the last 2-3 years in the league. He's a power play specialist, got half of his goals on the power play, 65 goals in the last 2 years. So he's going to make a difference for some team. I would assume if I'm Columbus, I'm looking at him to play alongside Pierre-Luc Dubois. If I'm Nashville, they need a little bit more jump outside of Philip Forsberg. From a Canucks perspective, there's a couple of names that I'm intrigued by. And most notably, I like Eric Halla. I think he provides a little bit of grit further down the lineup, but he can also jump up and play up the lineup as well. And based on the fact that there are a lot of, you know, value deals out there, you assume so. He's one, if that they can create some space. I like Eric Halla as a Canucks fit. The other one, and I know he's a player that some people love, some people don't, but to me, Anthony Duclair is still an intriguing name. I would rather go after a Duclair who has shown he can, when playing with skilled players and when given an opportunity, it seems like in the last year and a half, he's kind of figured out who he is in the NHL. With the right guidance and the right line mates, he could be an excellent value pickup. So to me, those two guys, Eric Halla and Anthony Duclair for the Canucks, if they can create cap space closer to the season and those guys don't sign anywhere else, those are two guys I'm looking at.
You know, a pretty shocking, I think, announcement today made by the Ontario Minister of Sport, Lisa McLeod, in regards to the Ontario Hockey League and the fact that there is potentially not going to be any body checking in that league this year. I mean, what's your take on that?
Yeah, this is something that puzzles me, because if you're in a position to play the game and you said, all right, you're going to be traveling on buses, you're going to be hanging out in locker rooms, you're going to be interacting with team staff, personnel, there's going to be a lot of interaction going on. You're going to be playing against the opposing team. They're going to be battling in the boards. You know, they're going to be battling in front of the net. Heck, there might even be scrums after the whistle, but no hitting is allowed. I'm not a medical professional. You've never mistaken me for one either. But if you're talking about COVID and spreading COVID, like, I would assume a scrum or battling in the corners is probably the same way it would be spread, right? Like, so what does laying a shoulder into a guy versus a scrum, what's the difference there? So I look at that announcement today and it doesn't make much sense. Like, you either have to say, hey, this is a risk and we can't play hockey, or you're going to have the checks and balances. You're going to have the medical professionals present where you make sure that this cannot spread. It's not a perfect science, but you're going to try your best at it. Saying no body checking doesn't really make any sense whatsoever, because, you know, if droplets are going to work their way onto the onto the ice and players are interacting and they're within 6 feet of each other, listen, the risk is there. So I don't get it. I wonder how the OHL and the subsequently maybe, you know, other leagues react to this. But to me, it doesn't make any sense, because just because, you know, you can't hit a player doesn't mean the risk is gone. If you're hitting the ice, there's going to be an element of risk there. So I don't get it. And honestly, I don't think it's going to fly. If you're the OHL, you're saying, yeah, thanks, but no thanks. This ain't going to work.
Yeah, I agree with you. I don't necessarily know how this is going to happen once, you know, February 4th is when the tentative start date for the OHL is. I don't necessarily know if they're going to be taking the ice, if that's still a rule. Randeep, thanks so much for joining us, man. Really appreciate your time today, and let's chat soon.
Absolutely. Keep up the great work, guys.
Thank you. That is Randeep Janda of Reach Deep and Sportsnet 650. And, of course, the host of Hockey Night in Canada, Punjabi, talking all things National Hockey League. What scares him the most about the Vancouver Canucks? What is the scariest thing about the Vancouver Canucks? He kind of stole my answer there, Josh. But don't worry. We'll still continue talking about this later on in the show. I think that this is a topic in which a lot of people are pretty interested in. What's going to be, you know, at the forefront, I guess, of the Vancouver Canucks next season. Earlier this week on Twitter, Josh, I saw a petition going around asking for former Vancouver Canucks fan favorite Todd Bertuzzi to be inducted into the Ring of Honor. I think I can speak for you, Josh. I think that you agree with me that Bertuzzi should definitely be in the Ring of Honor.
I do agree. Yep.
But there's a particular reason why he's probably not in the Ring of Honor, and I think everybody knows exactly what that is. So if there is backlash, and if they are worried about backlash, particularly from other markets in the NHL, especially one market, I think I've got a pretty creative way to potentially get the power forward into the Ring of Honor. I don't know if everybody's going to agree with me. I don't know if you're going to like me or like this idea, but I've got an idea.
We'll workshop it.
I'll explain what it is next. It's Roger Shergill, Josh Elliott Wolf on your home of the Canucks, Sportsnet 650.
Welcome back to Sportsnet Tonight with Jamie Dodd.
Welcome back. 8 o'clock, one day before Halloween. It is Sportsnet Tonight. Roger Shergill alongside Josh Elliott Wolf filling in for the vacationing Jamie Dodd. I'm sure he'll be back next week, holding down the fort for him this evening. A couple more hours to go here on Sportsnet Tonight. I want to get to a topic that was circulating around Twitter a couple of days ago, and it has to do with a guy who comes on these airwaves quite often, Josh, and a guy who Canucks fans absolutely adore. And he's been back to Rogers Arena in the past couple of years to celebrate the past 50 years of the Vancouver Canucks.
To a warm reception as well.
A very, very warm reception. So the love for this player, for what he brought to the Vancouver Canucks in the early 2000s, is still very much there. The question is, does he get put into the Ring of Honor? And I don't think, based on the skill of the player that we're talking about, or the points or anything like that, that he might have put in for the Vancouver Canucks is necessarily the reason why he's not in. It's because of another event that, of course, is probably going to, you know, it probably has caused up until right now the Vancouver Canucks to think twice about it. But the guy that we're talking about is Todd Bertuzzi. I think we both agree that what Bertuzzi did should make him eligible for the Ring of Honor.
Yeah, as far as what he did for the Canucks, he was a really big piece. I mean, Naslund obviously was kind of the centerpiece of that, but Bertuzzi went along with it, and the whole West Coast Express era was defined by Naslund, Morris, and Bertuzzi.
Yeah, and you know, it was a guy who I grew up liking a lot, and you know, as a kid, a guy that I watched quite often was Todd Bertuzzi. And what was interesting about him was it wasn't only his goal-scoring ability, which he was obviously fantastic at. It wasn't just the fact that he was an all-star, but it was the fact that he was sticking up for his teammates. He was fighting. He was hitting. He was all over the ice. And it wasn't very often where Todd Bertuzzi would not make an impact.
He's the reason people still have hope in Jake Virtanen. You know what I mean?
Yeah, yeah, exactly.
Yeah. People look at Bertuzzi, and he is everything you want Jake Virtanen to be.
There's not very often a conversation about Jake Virtanen that comes up in which Todd Bertuzzi's name is not mentioned.
Exactly, yeah.
And so we know why he's probably not in the Ring of Honor. And I don't think that's something that needs to be mentioned. If you're a fan of the Vancouver Canucks, if you're a fan of Todd Bertuzzi from that time period, you probably have an idea why he's not in the Ring of Honor. It's because of a very bad moment in not only his life, but in the history of the Vancouver Canucks and in the history, quite honestly, of the entire National Hockey League. So if the Vancouver Canucks are worried about having backlash from other fan bases, particularly the fan base that was a big rival of the Canucks back then, how could Todd Bertuzzi be in the Ring of Honor? I've got an idea, Josh, and I don't know if you're going to like it, and I don't know if the listeners are going to like it. Let me know your thoughts. 650-650 is the text message inbox. But what about if the Vancouver Canucks were to induct Todd Bertuzzi, Brendan Morrison, and Marcus Naslund together as the West Coast Express into the Ring of Honor, one big plaque, all three of their faces, all three of their numbers. It goes up to the ring. They all come in to give a speech. Maybe Bertuzzi is the main guy. Maybe he's the player that everybody really, you know, pushes to the forefront and into the limelight about. Maybe he's the guy that the night is really, you know, circled around. But at the end of the day, all three of those guys go in.
Man, that's tough. And my counter argument is, like, Naslund's already retired. His number's already retired, and he's had his night, and he deserves to have his number retired. And while he was a great player, and like I said, he did help define an era of Canucks hockey, Marcus Naslund doesn't necessarily need to be retired and also in the Ring of Honor. And I know this is your way of, like, skirting around any controversy, but I do think the controversy would still come, and you might as well just go for it. Get Bertuzzi in there and
let's forget about it. Just do it.
Just deal with it. And it's short-term pain for long-term gain.
So I don't know. First of all, I agree with you. First of all, I agree that the Todd Bertuzzi to the Ring of Honor should have already happened. And I don't know if it's because of the fact that of what happened back in 2004 is the reason why he's not in. I think that's what we were assuming. But who knows? Maybe the Canucks just feel that he shouldn't be in. But at the end of the day, if we are saying here that Todd Bertuzzi should go into the Ring of Honor, I think the very best way to do it is, just put him in. Let's just do it, put him in, give him the same ceremony that everybody else got. That being said, if indeed what we're saying is true and there is, and the Canucks are afraid of some sort of pushback from the rest of the NHL fan base, then I think this is a pretty good way to do it. And let me explain, let me give an example, I guess, in a different sport, if you want to call it that, as to where this happens. And some people are probably going to be shouting at the radio when I say this, but look at professional wrestling. Ric Flair is one of the best wrestlers in the entire WWE, or entire pro wrestling as a whole. He is a multiple-time Hall of Famer. There's really only one Hall of Fame, Josh, that really matters, and that's the WWE Hall of Fame. So how is he a multiple-time Hall of Famer? Well, he's a one-time Hall of Famer because he is Ric Flair, and he's that damn good. And then he's a second Hall of Famer because he was in one of the best factions, or stables, or tag teams, whatever you want to call it, and that was the Four Horsemen. And
of
so
course.
He gets into the Hall of Fame because of being with the Four Horsemen and because of being Ric Flair himself. So that's a two-time Hall of Famer. It's the same sort of thing with Marcus Naslund. He's part of a great line, but he himself was also pretty great, and that's why his number's in the rafters. But You know, now there's an opportunity to have Bertuzzi and Morrison honored, just like there was an opportunity to have guys like Arn Anderson with Ric Flair honored.
Yeah, I do think, man, I don't even know if the West Coast Express is the best line in Canucks history. And so if you're going to do that, you also have to put the Sedins and Burrows up there again. But Burrows is already up in the Ring of Honor, and the Sedins are already retired. So obviously it's a bit of a different scenario. And
yeah, it's a bit of a different scenario. I understand your point of view. It's a little bit of a different scenario because, you know, I think number one, my reasoning to do it with the line is specifically to get Todd Bertuzzi in to the ring, right? I think it's the guy that we all believe deserves to be up there. There's this, you know, bad moment which happened, which is preventing it, so we think, and this is a way to get him in. The number two thing with the Sedins and Burrows, to me, Josh, is that it's not necessarily nostalgic, right? They just retired. Burrows, it seems like yesterday, in which he got traded for Jonathan Dolan. Jonathan Dolan is still a prospect for the San Jose
Sharks. Still playing in Europe somewhere.
He's still in the San Jose Sharks system. He's still a prospect, you know? So it's not nostalgic. And I'm not saying that nostalgia has to be the reason as to why that needs to happen. But I think it's been a long time coming for Todd Bertuzzi. He retired, I believe it was in 2012 or 2011. And, you know, it's been a number of years now. And every time he's come back, even when it was again as the opposition, I think he got a pretty warm reception. And as we saw earlier on last season, when all 50 eras or decades of the, or 5 decades of the Canucks, you know, players came out, Bertuzzi was the guy representing the 2000s. And that reception was fantastic.
For sure. And that's why I say, look, you just go for it and you put him in. You don't put him in a game against Colorado, but you maybe put him in a game against like Detroit as a team he used to play for.
That would not fly.
That would be a bad look. But yeah, you deal with the criticism and you kind of got to roll with it because it's going to happen inevitably. But as a texter here, Gnor from Surrey said, 650-650, and I agree with this, Luongo should be in the Ring of Honor before anyone else.
I love that. I like that text from Gnor, and we're going to address it because, Josh, you and I, we're going to have this conversation about that. And so there are multiple guys to me that are still Ring of Honor worthy. And Gnor, I get your point. Luongo should be in the Ring of Honor. I don't agree with it, though. He should not be in the Ring of Honor.
That's bold.
Because he should be in the rafters.
Ah.
This is the best goaltender in Vancouver Canucks history. The guy that holds all the records in goaltending for the Canucks. And yeah, you might have the counter-argument saying, yeah, well, the goaltending in Vancouver wasn't all that great. But Luongo isn't an average goalie that came to Vancouver and took over all of these mediocre records. He was a legitimate all-star.
He was Vezina. He never won one, but he was Vezina caliber.
He was a top five goalie, at the very least, for his entire tenure, almost his entire tenure in Vancouver, especially early on, and especially in the 2010-11 Stanley Cup playoff run. At the very least, there were times in which you could have said he was the best goalie in the league. You could have said he was number two or number three. Alexander Ovechkin, I remember when he did an interview back in 2009 or 2010, saying that one goalie he hates playing against is Roberto Luongo. Luongo is, or was, one of the greatest goalies, not only in the NHL, not only for the Canucks at the time, but in NHL history. And the reason I'll say why NHL history is because this is a guy that very likely is going to the Hockey Hall of Fame. And for a guy to go to the Hockey Hall of Fame, the highest honor that could be bestowed upon any player, and we don't know if he's going to go for sure, but I think he's a Hall of Fame goalie, and that's the highest honor that is bestowed upon any player. How can the team that he played for 8 seasons, took him within 1 game of the Stanley Cup, not give him the highest honor for the team?
I'll give you a couple reasons. The first one, and this I've thought for a bit, and it's a tough discussion because I do think the Canucks maybe have a couple too many numbers retired for being a team without any Stanley Cups. And you can obviously make the case that every single player in the Ring of Honor deserves, or sorry, the in the rafters with their number retired deserves to be there. Same with the Ring of Honor. But when you already have six players up there and you haven't won a cup, it's really tough to add another.
I agree with you, but we're not talking about a player who is, you know, just a random guy who, you know, played for a couple of seasons, was really good, and now we're letting him go. And he should be in the, you know, Ring of Honor. It's not a random player, man. It's a guy that deserves to be in the Ring of Honor. In the rafters. And hey, if it wasn't for a very, I would say, salty breakup with the Canucks, to put it nicely, we wouldn't even be talking about whether he should be up there or not. It's a no-brainer. It was a no-brainer in 2012 that he should go into the ring, into the rafters. Because of the way the breakup happened, I get it. I agree with your point. The Canucks have way too many numbers in the rafters for a team that has not won a Stanley Cup. But is that a reason for the best goalie or just pure best players, one of the top five best players, one of the top five greatest Canucks of all time, to not go into the Ring of Honor or not go into the rafters?
But, and my thought here is if he had finished his career in Vancouver, I think it'd be a no-brainer for sure. But I don't even think he defines his career as a Vancouver Canuck, and he's a Florida Panther in his own mind. And for me to be like, hey, this guy belongs in the rafters, he has to be, when he remembers his NHL career and he talks about his time, he would first talk about Vancouver. And I think with Luongo, he loved his time in Florida a little bit more, and that has to do with the kind of rough breakup in Vancouver and everything that happened. But
well, you know, I think his time in Florida versus Vancouver is very, very different, right? When he was with the Florida Panthers for both 10 years, the teams weren't very good. And when his time is with the Canucks, he's probably looking back at it to the best hockey he has ever played in his entire career.
Yeah.
Right? And he's looking back at it into a time in which he was on a legitimate winning team with a chance to hoist the Stanley Cup and being just 60 minutes away from doing that. And hey, you're right. He might think of the fact that he was a Florida Panther for longer and the fact that he lives in Florida. But at the end of the day, when he retired, he is the one who took a front page ad in a local newspaper to thank the city of Vancouver.
For sure. And right. Look, I do think it's really tough. He was my favorite player growing up as well. Like I had like three posters of Luongo on my wall. He was my favorite player. And I do think he is the greatest goalie in Canucks history. And that does mean something. And if he gets his number retired, I'm not going to be mad about it. I'm not going to get on here and be like, man, this is a horrible mistake by the Canucks. What a classic move by the franchise. But I do think there's more. You need to put a hard line on, like, okay, if you put Luongo in, there might be a couple other guys in the future that you have to put in that you maybe necessarily didn't want to. And, like, if you put Luongo in, do you have to put Alex Edler in?
No.
But Alex Edler is the best defenseman in Canucks history.
Alex Edler is probably the best defenseman in Canucks history. But my point that I made earlier about Luongo is that he wasn't an above average goalie that came in and took all of these records, right? And Alex Edler is kind of like that. Not to say that he was above average or mediocre or anything like that. Alex Edler is a very, very good defenseman. Alex Edler was never regarded as a Norris Trophy defenseman. He was never regarded as a top 10 defenseman in the NHL, top 15 defenseman in the NHL. Is that what Alex Edler is? Like, Luongo was legitimately a star goalie. He went to All-Star games. He was in, won two gold medals, I believe, for Team Canada at the Olympics. This is a guy that, you know, represented his team and his club and his country on two of the biggest stages in the hockey world. This is a player that is different than Alex Edler in that sense, right? Just because Alex Edler might be the best defenseman in Canucks history, where his stock around the league is much different than Luongo's stock around the league. And, you know, there was a bit of an argument going around on Twitter this week as well about who are the top five Canucks players of all time. And you know what? Let's, like, I don't want to really guess necessarily get into this argument because of, you know, players saying, like, we're not going to fight over who goes six and who goes five or who goes five and four or whatever it might be. But let's just go with the top six best players in Canucks history, which I think most people will be okay with agreeing with. I think it's Daniel Sedin, not in any order, but Daniel Sedin, Henrik Sedin, Marcus Naslund, Trevor Linden, Pavel Bure, and Roberto Luongo. Luongo's the last guy I said on that list. What's the similarity between the other five guys?
They all do have their number retired.
They're all in the Ring of Honor. They're all in the rafters. And yeah. And that's why Luongo deserves to be up there and not in the Ring of Honor.
I do think it's a similar situation. And look, like I said, I'm not gonna lose any sleep if the Canucks announce they're gonna retire his number, but I do think it's gonna be, if he does get his number retired, it's going to be a similar situation to Bure, where time has passed, wounds have healed, and now the organization is ready to give him the ultimate honor.
Yeah, and, you know, it depends on what the organization views as a wound, and depends on how Roberto Luongo views that as well, right? I think Luongo, despite being very much of a polarized figure in Vancouver, appreciates his time in Vancouver. I think he realizes, especially once he went to Florida again, that, hey, what I do for a living is play hockey, my favorite sport, and I get to, you know, play hockey for a living, and life is good. And I think when you're in Vancouver, a team that's on the cusp of winning a Stanley Cup at that time, and you are the face of the franchise, that gets away from you. And I think at times he was really in a bad state of mind, probably, when he was thinking about all of these things and all the pressure that came and living in Vancouver at that time and playing for the Canucks at that time. But enough time, I think, and you know, you'll have to ask him obviously how he really feels, has passed for the wounds, at least in his eyes, that have healed with the fan base. And we know the fan base loves him, because when they were here, or when he was here for the Daniel and Henrik Sedin's jersey retirement ceremony, he got the lovable Lou chance that the Canucks fans always gave him. And we know that he loves the city because of that ad in the front page of the newspaper that he put in once he retired. So the relationship from the fans and for Luongo, I think, has been fixed, and I think has reciprocated both ways. The question is, with ownership and with the executives, how does that relationship last? And, you know, I don't really know, but does the impact have anything to do with that cap recapture penalty that is currently hurting the Vancouver Canucks?
Yeah, it's not anything between, it's a weird situation because the fans, I think, can all undoubtedly say, yeah, we love you, Luongo. You're the best goalie in franchise history, but, and like the contract was an issue, but it's getting dealt with now. It's definitely more of a Luongo versus the organization. And I don't even think they really have beef with each other. It's just like, it's awkward. You know, and I think, like I said, with time heals all wounds, and they'll get through it, and eventually they'll make a decision. Like, he has to be either at least in the Ring of Honor, and that's where I would put him personally. And like I said, I have a couple reasons, just because he's a great player, and he was, like you said, one of the faces of the franchise, but he didn't necessarily define that era of Canucks hockey like the Sedins did. And for the early part, it did look like he was going to, but the Sedins kind of took over. And again, like I said, he defines his career, I would think, as a Florida Panther, though obviously he did enjoy his time in Vancouver.
650-650, if you want to weigh in, is the text message inbox. It is Sportsnet Tonight. Roger Shurgill alongside Josh Elliott Wolf. The one thing about this conversation to which makes me 100% agree that he should, or believe, I should say, that he should be in the rafters and not the Ring of Honor, is, you know, this is a class, is an A-grade guy, right? He's a first-class player. He's a first-class person. He's a player who was elite in his position at what he did for the Vancouver Canucks, but in the entire National Hockey League. And players that are of that ilk get their numbers retired. And that is the best way to honor a player that's that good. And I think if you just don't put him there, you're telling Luongo you're a second class player in this organization. And hey, will he really want to be a player that's thought about that, and will he agree to have his ring and name put into the Ring of Honor?
Yeah, that's a good question as well. Does he hold himself in a regard and point like, hey, look at all these records I set for you guys. I should be up there too. And I don't think he's that kind of guy who's like, I'm not going to show up if you put me in the Ring of Honor, only if you retire my number. But it is an interesting conversation to wonder if he may feel slighted by only getting the Ring of Honor.
Roger Shergill, Josh Elliott Wolf here on Sportsnet tonight. Coming up next, Chris Faber is going to be joining us from Canucks Army. Vasily Podkolzin hasn't necessarily been ripping it up in the KHL. But should you, as a Vancouver Canucks fan, be worried about the progress and the development of Podkolzin? Faber has been watching a lot of his games. We'll get his thoughts coming up at the bottom of the hour. It's Raja, it's Josh, it's Sportsnet Tonight, a Halloween edition of Sportsnet Tonight on your home of the Vancouver Canucks, Sportsnet 650.
Now more of Sportsnet Tonight with Jamie Dodd.
It is Sportsnet Tonight here on your home of the Canucks, Sportsnet 650. No Jamie Dodd today. He is vacationing. We'll be back in the thick of things starting next week. Roger Shergill filling in for Jamie Dodd alongside producer Josh Elliott Wolf on the other side of the glass. You'll hear him chime in throughout the entirety of this show.
Hopefully.
Unless I get lost. After that last take.
Man. Hot takes.
Reading these texts. Paul the North Van. I see that text. I see it. Talking about what should and shouldn't be in the Ring of Honor, what should and shouldn't be in the rafters.
It's a good one.
It's a very good one. We'll get to it maybe in the next segment. Tell us who, in your eyes, should be in the Ring of Honor and in the rafters, and where does Roberto Luongo fall in that category? Paul believes that a certain region of Canucks defenseman Sammy Salo's body deserves to be in the Ring of Honor or in the rafters. And hey, based on the amount of injuries and the shot blocks and what exactly happened to him over the course of his career, the weird and freaky injuries, taking pucks to areas in which you would never want anything of the sort to hit. Yeah, I would say that he's probably right. That area of Sammy Salo should definitely be in the rafters or in some sort of Hall of Fame. It is Sportsnet Tonight. Chris Faber is going to be joining us. He of Canucks Army and the Canucks Conversation podcast. You can hear him alongside David Quadrelli. We're going to get into a lot of the talk about Vasily Podkolzin and the concern, or if there should be concern for Podkolzin based on his play as of late in the KHL. And actually, if you look recently, a lot of that play for the next little while might not be in the KHL. Could be in the VHL, and it could also be in the World Junior Hockey Championships as well. But to talk about that and more, he is Chris Faber, Canucks Army, and the Canucks Conversation podcast. Faber, what's going on, man? How are you?
Well, doing good, boys. Just wrapped up a pasta meal down in Burnaby there. Dave took me out to his fancy Italian place, and now I get to talk about Canucks prospects. So I'm living the dream right now.
Well, you know what? After this, I will let you go, play some Warzone, and make sure you get those reses.
Well, absolutely. Well, it's good to mix one in. I got to teach Quads. I don't think he has an X button on his controller, so he doesn't know how to revive anybody.
Let's get to some of the Canucks prospects, and you know, I think the main one that everybody wants to talk about is Vasily Podkolzin, and you know, more particularly the lack of ice time. What is the main reason in your eyes for that?
Well, I think it's because he's a teenager playing in the KHL, and specifically playing on SKA, which is a team that, you know, in the past has been a team that really relies on their veteran presence, and they've been a team that's been elite in the KHL. I mean, this was This was the team that Vladimir Putin loved, sunk a bunch of money into because they wanted to go win the Olympics for Russia. And, you know, they had the line of Pavel Datsyuk and Kovalchuk for a while there. I mean, this is a team that really, it just feels like the big powerhouse one in the KHL. And I think that the unfortunate situation is if you're a teenage player who's not wanting to commit to a KHL contract and play there for your career, it's a tough spot to be in because, though Vasily Podkolzin is potentially one of the best two-way players on that team and, you know, should be given a little bit more of an opportunity on some of the special teams units, the fact that he is, you know, playing his final year now in Russia before coming over to North America, I don't think that they really want to play that kid in that spot, specifically on that team. Like, there's a lot of teams in the KHL that I really think he could be a top six player on and be a power play guy and be a penalty kill guy, but the fact that he's with Ska and, you know, the history that Ska has, it just makes it very difficult for a kid who's in his position at 19 years of age to really get any ice time in the spot that he's on.
So you believe it comes more down to the opportunity that he is getting or lack thereof. But is there anything specifically about his game that he could change in your eyes that might give him that opportunity?
Yeah, whatever those 9 things that Elias Pettersson worked on a couple years ago to get his shot better, Vasily Podkolzin needs all of that. The only thing that he's really lacking in his game right now is his finishing ability. You see it quite a bit. Like, he gets a lot of shots off, but the unfortunate thing is some of those shots just come from him crossing the blue line and attempting a wrist shot from, you know, 50 feet out. And they just don't really, like, he needs to find a different way to attack, I guess. And that's the unfortunate thing, because when we see him play, you know, in the VHL or in the World Juniors or U20 tournaments, like, he's electric and he's able to just lean on these guys and easily force his way to the net and get good shots off. In the KHL, the defender's a little bit better. Like, I would say that the KHL is potentially the second best league in the world. So the fact that he is trying to lean on some of these defenders and be a power forward like everyone wants Jake Virtanen to do, like, he goes to the net hard, and you absolutely have to love that about his game. But it just seems like the thing that's lacking right now is some sort of finishing ability, and I wonder how much of that comes from the confidence of being a 13th forward, being stuck in the press box, not being able to play your game, you know, watching other 19 and 20-year-old kids be moved up to the first line and be given opportunities with the top players on the power play, and he just sits there and gets passed on every time, even though he might be the most skilled player on that roster in certain situations, and definitely the best two-way forechecking player. He controls the neutral zone at a high level. The possession numbers that he has are absolutely ridiculous, some of the best on that team. So it's unfortunate, and I think that the one thing that he could probably work on a little bit is just getting that shot off from a little bit better spots on the ice, and just kind of, it just seems like times he just shoots the puck right into a goaltender's glove. So he's got to work on getting it either 2 inches higher or 2 inches lower in certain spots.
Chris Faber of Canucks Conversation Podcast and Canucks Army joining us here on Sportsnet 650. Roger Shurgill alongside Josh Elliott-Wolf. So if he's not getting the ice time in the KHL, and as you mentioned, that's because of lack of opportunity, the odds of him getting that ice time, at least from my point of view, from Canucks head coach Travis Green, also seems like it's going to be a little bit of a long shot, at least right in the beginning. How do you view that, and do you think that the Canucks fans need to temper their expectations when he comes over to North America?
No, absolutely not. No, he's going to come over to North America. He's going to already be a guy that can play on your fourth or third line and be super effective, just as effective as a guy like Tyler Motte. Like, right off the bat, he's going to be just as good as Tyler Motte is right now, if not better, at being a forechecker and being a little bit stronger. And this kid's 19, right? Like, we need to remember that he's got a lot of room to grow. The offensive ability, I hope, is what's going to come down the road, but I think that that might be the only thing that people might want to temper their expectations on a little bit. Unfortunately, we've been blessed with super rookies like Elias Pettersson and Quinn Hughes, and even Brock Besser to a certain degree. Unfortunately, you're not going to see that with Vasily Podkolzin. He's probably not going to be up for the Calder in his first year, but what he's going to do is bring you some of the best bottom six performance you're going to see in a Canucks jersey in a long time. I mean, since the days of, you know, potentially Yannick Hansen might be a good example of what he might be able to come into the NHL as. But when he gets here, this kid is an absolute coach's dream. Like, you see these shifts that he has in the KHL, they're short, because I just feel like if he's not taking a 20 or 30 second shift, he's like getting the whip cracked on him at intermission. It feels like he almost looks a little bit scared in certain spots to stay out on the ice a little bit longer or anything like that. So I think when he gets here, I think he's going to mesh extremely well with Travis Green. I think Travis Green is going to fall in love with the player that he is on the ice. And I think off the ice, he seems like a pretty good kid as well. So I think the day that he lands in Vancouver, he's at least on that fourth line. or potentially even on that third, or depending on if we're still talking about who's going to play with Bo Horvat. He might even get a shot up there when he gets here.
Where we're going to see potentially a little bit more offensive contributions from Podkolzin is in the World Junior Hockey Championships. What should we expect from his play then?
Yeah, I think you're bang on right there. Like, that's when this is the time for him to showcase it, right? It's going to be his third World Juniors that he's attended. He's going to be probably the captain of Team Russia going into it. I've talked to a lot of insiders, a lot of scouts in this industry, and a good portion of them are saying that Vasily Podkolzin is going to be the best player in this tournament. And like I mentioned earlier, we love to see him driving on these guys in the KHL and kind of pulling that old, I know you guys have been talking about Todd Bertuzzi all night. Like, you see that similar move with the right hand on the stick and the left kind of chicken wing up to work his way towards the net, the old Todd Bertuzzi move. You see a lot of that from Vasily Podkolzin at the KHL level. And to think that he can do that against these guys that are 6'6", 240-pound men, he's going to be going up against some 20-year-old kids and absolutely leaning on them. We're going to see probably one of the strongest players in this tournament in Vasily Podkolzin. And, you know, like, Kirby Dock's a good example of who's going to be loaned to this World Championships. I think he's going to be a similar impact to Team Russia that Kirby Dock will be for Canada.
Chris, I want to shift gears a bit to the second-round pick of last year. Nils Höglander, playing in the SHL, took him 11 games, but he got his first goal. It was on a penalty shot. This is a guy that, correct me if I'm wrong, he seems like more of a top-six kind of skilled guy, at least from what I've seen. Is the lack of scoring, at least early in the season, a cause for concern, or is it just growing pains right now?
Yeah, it's unfortunate because if you take it back to preseason, throughout the preseason, he was over a point per game. And then comes into the first two games of the year and he puts up 4 points, then pretty much went cold for the next 7 or 8 games after that point. And it's tough to see why. Like, he was taken off the penalty or the power play a little bit, so that was unfortunate. He's only getting about 14 minutes of ice time per game right now in the SHL. But the thing that we need to remember is the SHL is one of the strongest leagues in the world, too. And the fact that he's consistently up on the first line for a team like Rögle, who's one of the best teams in the SHL. I mean, Vasily Podkolzin playing the KHL is one thing, but to see Nils Höglander having a lot of success in the SHL is the other. And, yeah, the points aren't really coming right now, but there's been some tracking covering his Corsi and his possession numbers, and he's had the highest Corsi percentage in the SHL, which is incredible for a kid of his age. He's controlling the puck a lot. Rarely is he on the ice when there's a shot against. So you're starting to see him dominate in the neutral zone, similar to a guy like Vasily Podkolzin. So, Canucks fans should be super excited for both of these guys. But, you know, what you just mentioned about Nils Höglander being a guy who's a good player for a top six role, like, that's a great spot for him. And his skill is such a high level that, you know, he just screams, like, play me with Elias Pettersson. Like, I would need to be there. That's the type of game that he plays.
Yeah, and I was going to touch on that a bit. Do you think he could, and I don't want to say necessarily challenge for a spot on Pettersson's wing right away, but how far away do you think he is from being a relatively consistent top six guy at an NHL level?
Yeah, I think going into this training camp, the two guys that I find these guys almost to be in the exact same situation, and it's Nils Höglander and Jack Raspo. And I think that both of these guys are going to have a very tough uphill battle to make the Canucks roster out of camp. But I do think it's doable. And I think if I were to bet on Rathbone or Höglander, I would bet on Höglander being able to make the team, just simply because he's the type of player who absolutely dominates in practice. He's an incredibly skilled player with the puck when he's, you know, messing around or anything in drills. He competes extremely hard. He's stronger than he looks. So I think he's going to shock a lot of people at training camp. I think that, you know, when we get back in the arena, hopefully in December here, and are able to watch another training camp, which is going to feel like the third in 1 year. It's what it's going to feel like. But, you know, getting a chance to watch Nils Höglander just dominate these drills, I think he's going to shock a lot of coaches. So I don't know if I wouldn't be penciling him into my lineup on opening night. But if I'm a betting man and I got decent odds, like, I wouldn't be afraid to bet on Nils Höglander being on the Canucks roster this fall. Or winter, I guess, whatever the heck you guys want to call it.
Yeah, for sure. This weird training camp. But yeah, speaking of training camp, Jack Rathbone, you mentioned his name. He could potentially challenge for a spot. There's also Olia Levy. Today they signed Brisebois. With the loss of Stetcher, your Levy seems to have the most direct route, but could Rathbone maybe make a push to potentially take some minutes in the bottom pair there?
I think he could potentially, but the thing that Rathbone is going to have to do is he's going to have to be so good that you would have to play him over Ole Yalevi on the, like, because Yalevi's going to be able to kill penalties, right? So you kind of need to take the battle of, like, is it worth it to play Yalevi and then give Nate Schmidt time off on the penalty kill? Or is Jack Rathbone just that good that you're going to force Nate Schmidt to be a penalty killer? Because Schmidt was the fourth highest penalty killing defenseman for the Vegas Golden Knights last year. So I don't think that he's, you know, exactly the type of guy you want killing penalties. And I think giving Quinn Hughes and Nate Schmidt a little bit of a break while they're on the penalty kill is a good spot for them. But at the same time, like, you know, Rathbone is kind of the unknown in the situation, right? Like, out of the defense, the young defenseman that could make this team out of camp, my money's on Brogan Rafferty. I think that he is the closest to being an NHL defenseman. I think that I need to see Yalevi at least stay healthy for 20 days in a row, which is unfortunately something that I haven't really seen yet in his career as a professional. So I need to be able to see that first. Like, potentially Yalevi could come out and win the job out of camp and play on, with Jordy Benn on that third pairing, but I just don't see it. I think that Brogan Rafferty had a pretty tough training camp 2.0. He was getting turnstile by NHL players. He wasn't playing great. I think that he really took that to heart in the offseason. I've talked to him. I mean, he's taking it really serious, guys. Like, he stopped watching The Bachelor to spend more time training, and that's pretty big if you know how big of a fan he is of The Bachelor. So Rafferty, I think, is going to come into camp with, you know, I think it's his spot to lose, really. And I think that the cool thing about this year's training camp is the storyline between those three defensemen of Ole Yalevi, Jack Rathbone, and Brogan Rafferty. Like, it's got to be the guy who just was an all-star at the AHL level, the closest league to the NHL. He was an excellent player for the Utah Comets. But it's also his spot to lose. And Yalevi and Rathbone, if they have an amazing camp, they really impress Travis Green, then they are going to make this team over a guy like Brogan Rafferty, who really, after what he did last year, that should 100% be his spot.
A few more minutes here with Chris Faber of Canucks Conversation Podcast and Canucks Army here on Sportsnet Tonight. Roger Shergill and Josh Elliott Wolf. You talked a little bit there about Nate Schmidt. I want to ask you, if the addition of Schmidt to the top four, and that very much upgraded a top four in my eyes, does that offset the loss of Troy Stetcher on that bottom pair to you?
Oh, man, that's a good question. Yeah, I think that Nate Schmidt is definitely going to be an improvement to what Chris Tanev was on the way out. But, I mean, like, yeah, that improvement's a great improvement from Tanev up to Schmidt. But I think looking at what you're going to have on the third pairing, you had a premium third pairing defense when you had Troy Stetcher here. And unfortunately, you don't anymore. So I'm really interested to see how they use Schmidt. Like, I know a lot of people have thought about the idea of Alex Edler and Nate Schmidt being a pairing, but I can't get it out of my mind of how bad I want to see Quinn Hughes play with Nate Schmidt. I think they're going to bring out the best of each other in moving the puck. But yeah, I think that the loss of Stetcher in that spot is really tough, because he was a guy, like, even if you're just looking at stuff on the ice, he was an incredible guy to have in your third pairing who could bump up and play in your top four. And now any injury to the Canucks top four, you know, and that means that Jordy Benn's coming up, or Ole Yalevi's coming up, or Brogan Rafferty's coming up. Like, that's a huge loss, I think, that part on the Canucks' actual roster and looking at the defense score. So, unfortunately, yeah, I mean, like, the top four has improved in a little bit, and I'm sure that Quinn Hughes is going to be a better player next year than he was this year. But that thought of having an injury, or if we go back to the old Canucks, like, last year they were fine. They didn't have a lot of injuries, nobody on the right side. But if they get any injuries next year in that top four, you're really starting to struggle to put together a defense core that seems like a playoff team, really.
So the Canucks do, like, their cap situation is so tough right now, but are there any lower cost free agents that remain on the market that you potentially see fitting well in this lineup, assuming the Canucks are able to kind of make a move and free up, whether it be 1 to 2 million of cap before the season starts? Are there any free agents that kind of catch your eye?
Well, I love the Michael Grabner story. I'm just kind of in that camp. I just like to see him in a Canucks jersey. But I don't think that they're going to be able, especially with the second buyout window passing on a guy like Brandon Sutter, I don't think they're going to be able to move a Brandon Sutter contract or a Jay Beagle contract or a Sven Berchi contract. I know the Canucks don't want to hold any money on Sven Berchi, so moving that money is going to be so tough. So I unfortunately think that they're going in to training camp with what they have right now. And I know that some young players are going to take some steps and this team could be better next year. But I think the team that left the bubble was a better team overall, especially the forward group. I mean, the Canucks,
in the playoffs really just kind of rode that top six and being able to outscore teams and outperform at 5-on-5 and on the power play. And unfortunately, they don't have that as good this year. I think there's a lot of questions on what's going to happen in the top six. And I think some of those questions are fine to ask. I mean, is it going to be the lotto line? Is Jake going to play with Pettersson and Miller? Like, there's a lot of questions going into it that I think that those questions wouldn't have had to be asked if a guy like Tyler Toffoli was to stay in Vancouver and help give some more to that top six. But yeah, I don't know, unless they're able to somehow pull something off and get Brandon Sutter's contract off the books. I don't think that they can really even be shopping for anybody in free agency right now. I believe they're over the cap actually right now.
All right, Faber, we've let you wait long enough. I know there's a particular player in which you wanted us to ask you about. But, you know, the time has finally come. Canucks sixth-round pick Dmitrius Ladeyev has been playing well lately and could be in contention for a spot on the Russian World Junior team. Let it all out. What have you liked about this young kid?
Boys, have you guys seen the clips of this kid yet?
Yes.
Okay, the kid is unreal. He plays the game at such a high level. His compete is just off the charts. He's the type of guy that you see go in the sixth round and you're like, oh, I should probably start watching this guy. What did the Canucks see in this kid? And he is absolutely electric. Right now playing in the VHL, he's scoring more goals in the VHL than he is in the MHL right now. And MHL is kind of like the Russian version of Major Junior. And the VHL is kind of like, I guess the AHL. It's the minor league to the KHL. The kid has been able to score 4 goals in 8 games there. And that's not even the best part of his game. The best part of his game is the effort that he's giving in the defensive zone. He's winning a ton of faceoffs. He's got excellent form, just absolutely dominating against these 20 and under kids in the MHL in the faceoff circle. Goes up to a professional league and is dominating there. I've seen a lot of people rank him as a second-round pick. I think I even saw him in a first-round pick on somebody's board the other day. So the Canucks are getting Zlodiev. I'm here for the hype. Big Z is my man. I know they got him at 5'11 on, I think, Elite Prospects. He ain't that tall. He's a little bit of a short king himself. So I'm excited to see what this kid can do. He's a long-term project, but if he's able to continue to play like he is right now, I think the Canucks really got themselves something in the sixth-round pick there. And he should make the World Junior team for Russia this year. As an 18-year-old, that's a great feat for him. So if he does end up making the team, we might be able to see him play alongside Vasily Podkolzin on the penalty kill, potentially on the power play as well. But definitely next year, he's going to be a force in this World Junior Tournament. So, yeah, keep your eye on Dmitrius Ladeyev. Thank you, boys. I was just starting to heat up a little bit. I thought I was going to pop off if you weren't going to let me talk about this guy.
We were trying to test you.
Yeah, you're doing a good job. I was just starting to squeeze the stress ball a little bit.
Faber, man, thank you so much for your time today. Really appreciate all of the insight you have to give on the Canucks prospects. And, man, let's do it again sometime soon, okay?
Absolutely, fellas. You have a good rest of the night.
Thank you. That is Chris Faber from Canucks Conversation Podcast. Here I'm with David Quadrelli, and he is also of Canucks Army.
And a must follow for sure if you want to keep up with Canucks prospects. I know we've had a few of like these Twitter guys, and especially when the Canucks were kind of going through the rebuild, of like you just followed them on Twitter. They post all the videos of any Canucks prospects, and you can kind of keep up that way. Faber is now that guy for sure.
And he's up early every time there's a game.
He sacrifices, so we don't have to.
Exactly. I like my sleep, man. Dude, I would not be able to do that.
Yeah, the I think it's like 4 a.m., 5 a.m. wake-ups, man. It's a tough gig, but he grinds, and he definitely he's a must-follow, like I said, at Chris Faber 39, I believe.
Great chat there with Chris Faber. You can watch or listen to the interview in its entirety if you only caught part of it over on sportsnet.ca/650. But coming up on the top of the hour, Seattle Seahawks are in another NFC West showdown this week, taking on Scott Rintoul and Caroline Frolic, San Francisco 49ers. It's going to be another interesting battle. Josh and I will discuss that on the other side as well and give you some of our thoughts on the Vancouver Canucks as well. It's Sportsnet tonight here on your home of the Canucks, Sportsnet 650.
Welcome back to Sportsnet Tonight with Jamie Dodd.
It is Sportsnet Tonight, 9 o'clock. Hope everybody is doing well. It is Halloween Eve, and we spent
That's
a lot of the...
That's not a thing.
It's a thing.
I guess, well, you could just... Any day's an eve if you...
Really think about it.
Yeah.
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 If you dive that much deeper into it. Yeah, I think it's Halloween Eve. It's the eve of Halloween.
I guess so.
In about 3 hours' time is when all the ghosts and everything start coming out.
Yeah, we're cool until then, though.
Yeah. Oh, yeah. We'll be well out of this studio because, as we know, this is a dungeon. There's definitely some freaky stuff happening.
Yeah, for sure.
We spent a chunk of this show discussing some of the spookier things that could happen to the Vancouver Canucks or have happened to the Vancouver Canucks in this offseason. We also talked about what is something that about the Canucks that will haunt the other teams. So there has definitely been a very spooky and Halloween theme to this show. But we're going to switch gears a little bit now to some National Football League action and also some Major League Baseball as well. We will get your texts and your tweets as well. There's a lot of them that we see, and we'll read them at the bottom of the hour or just before the bottom of the hour. At some point during this segment, we will get to those, talking about the Vancouver Canucks, talking about some of those scary moments, talking about the conversation that we had 1 hour ago about Todd Bertuzzi and Roberto Luongo. We will discuss all of those. But on Sunday, it is week 8 of the National Football League season. Big matchup for the Seattle Seahawks after their first loss of the season last week to Kyler Murray and the Arizona Cardinals. It is another big NFC West showdown, Josh, against San Francisco.
Yes, sir.
And it's a game in which Seattle is going to be missing some key members of their defense. We don't necessarily know yet about Jamal Adams. Shaq Griffin not going to be in the lineup. And now it's another dominant team in San Francisco. And it's going to be a game, Josh, in which they must let Russ cook.
Yeah, especially with Carson injury. And like it's going to be tough for the Seahawks. But also the Niners, of course, dealing with injuries of their own. They're not the San Francisco 49ers of last season.
No.
But
that team has been completely riddled with injuries throughout their entire lineup.
Yeah, it's been chaos. But it's always fun when it's Seattle, San Fran. It always makes for a good game. And yeah, you definitely want to, if you're a Seahawks fan, you want to see Russ cooking as much as possible in this game. And it's going to be really interesting to see because I believe Carson's out. Hyde is questionable, so it'll be interesting to see how much they rely on their running backs.
Yeah, that's definitely... So if we're talking about it from a pure fantasy point of view, I think the guy that is expected to lead the outfield or the backfield is DJ Dallas.
Which is not fun.
No, because Travis Homer is a guy that we would have looked at and been like, that's not fun. And now it's his backup.
Yeah, yeah. Wait, Carlos Hyde, I would have been like, eh. But yeah, so from a purely fantasy perspective, like if you have Metcalf and Lockett this week, you're probably having a good time.
Yes. And, as we saw last week, an absolute dominating outing from Tyler Lockett. And, I kind of want to talk about this as well, kind of a little bit off topic, but just the fact that DK Metcalf's chase downfield after Russell Wilson throws that interception last game.
Man.
And then Tyreek Hill goes today that Patrick Mahomes would never do that.
Yeah.
We're talking about an absolute potential MVP this year in Russell Wilson. But to me, obviously DK Metcalf is going to do whatever it takes to try and prevent his team from being scored on, and that was an absolutely great run because I think a lot of people were like, you spend all that energy to tackle him and you get tackled inside the 10 and they're going to get an easy touchdown, and Seattle stops them.
Man, the defense had to stop them at that point. The effort, that's an effort play, and you bet the sideline of Seattle once Metcalf made that tackle was like, oh man, we got to make the stop, otherwise that doesn't look as good. But yeah, Seattle is the only team, and I thought about this as the game was going on. I was like, man, this is the only team that could throw an interception in as they were about to get a touchdown and still somehow like make it look good and have nobody care that they were about to get a touchdown and had an interception.
Somewhere, someplace, Bick Nazar is smiling right now.
Yes. Every Seahawks game is different. Every Seahawks game is the same.
You're right. It's a completely, you know, Seahawk thing to do. But what makes the Seahawks fun, for me at least, is Russell Wilson, and it is that ability of that offense to just show their prowess each and every week. You always think that Wilson is going to really go off, and when you have a guy like DK Metcalf, and you have Chris Carson on most nights, and you have Tyler Lockett in that offense, it's always going to make for a great game. But the fact that Russell Wilson is able to play to the caliber that he's playing at right now, to me, makes Seattle the most exciting team in the league, to me at least.
Definitely. And there's other... like
there's great offenses.
Yeah, KC is always interesting. But KC, you know, the thing about Seattle is, yes, they have the offensive pieces and they have the talent there, but then their defense is just not good. So it always makes it interesting because they're giving up points, and that provides the opportunity for the game to be entertaining on top of that.
AJ Hinch is now a member of the Detroit Tigers. Josh, as we switch things over to to Major League Baseball. And I know you, not necessarily about AJ Hinch, but about the Chicago White Sox, have a pretty opinionated stance on what they did.
Yeah, they brought back Tony La Russa as the manager of the White Sox. And my one question is, why would you bring back Tony La Russa? Like, Tim Anderson plays on the White Sox, one of the most exciting young players in baseball. And La Russa, immediately after the hire, is already criticizing, I don't know if you remember, but Anderson hit a grand slam on a 3-0 pitch when the White Sox were already up by like 7 runs midway through the season. And a lot of people, a lot of old-fashioned baseball minds were like, why are you even swinging at that pitch? You got to respect the other team. And a lot of the new-age people were like, hey, well, he's up there to bat. He should make the most of every at-bat. And so La Russa was saying that, quote, it's just not sportsmanlike. Our sport is team against team. What it isn't, though, is an exhibition of your talents. And my next question is, why can't it be an exhibition of your talents? Like, the main problem with baseball for me is that it lacks personality. And a lot of the reason that young people aren't interested in the game is because it's an old man's game, and it's not consistently entertaining.
And hockey has the same sort of ideologies, I would say, maybe a little bit more liberal, perhaps. I don't know. But I think that that's something that a lot of people are challenging in the game of hockey as well.
Yeah, for sure, in both sports. And look, baseball and, like you said, hockey to an extent, baseball is an old-fashioned game with old-fashioned minds that are holding back players that want to change the game. Now, like, Tony La Russa has a great resume. He's a Hall of Famer. He's the third winningest manager in MLB history. He's a 3-time World Series champion. That's really cool. That's good for him. But he's also 76 years old, and the White Sox aren't bringing him in as a guy that's going to reinvent the wheel. Like, it seems like the White Sox really like that old wheel, and that's what's wrong with baseball. Nobody wants to push the envelope, and nobody wants change right now. And the frustrating thing for me is the White Sox were already a really good team, and they already had one of the best records in baseball this year. Jose Abreu and Tim Anderson, they were both top 10 in wins above replacement for position players this season. And obviously it's a short season that has an impact, but still everyone was on the same playing field. The biggest thing to me is that they were a fun team this year, and Tony La Russa is just bringing back, or is just bringing the opposite vibe to that team. And it's a backwards move that I guess I just don't really want to see a team making at this point.
Well, especially like the fact that they're a young team.
Yeah.
Right. And then they go ahead and get a guy that doesn't necessarily, at least on paper, jive with the how that team, I guess the players and personnel, want to perhaps live on their day-to-day baseball activities. And when you get a coach or a manager like that, it's going to impact all of those things. And so for the White Sox to make a move like that, to me at least, is, you know, comparable to a very young team like the Toronto Maple Leafs go ahead and signing a, or even the Canucks, I guess, you know, signing a coach that hasn't coached in a number of years, that style is so foreign.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, it'd be very similar, like, if the Canucks were to, say, bring in, like, Mike Keenan. And I don't know if that's the best example, but a guy like that where you're like, oh, what are they doing here? And baseball to an extent, hasn't changed as much. It's more the attitude of players and the intricacies of how the game is played has changed a little bit, but hockey has changed drastically. And it's really...
we're starting to see in the National Hockey League, a lot of the coaches that are now in the league are younger to an extent, but they also have a better appreciation for analytics, which I know in baseball isn't that big of a deal, but in the NHL, it's something that a lot of teams are just starting to really start getting behind, at least from an executive general manager point of view, from that level, but for their coaches to really buy into that model, it's not like that for every NHL team, right? And so it would be very different nowadays in the NHL for a guy like you mentioned, like perhaps it's Iron Mike, maybe it's somebody else, I don't know, but whoever it is from a past era that is not necessarily known to be all that great with young talent to come in and, you know, try and lead that team to success, I don't know if that would really go over well in the NHL. And to me, it's the same thing that's happening right now with the White Sox.
Yeah, for sure. And like you said, Travis Green, I'll use Travis Green as an example. He has spoken about analytics before, and he says, like, man, it's a huge tool and we have to use it. And it's really good to see the appreciation of analytics that even a few years ago wasn't really there in hockey at all. Like, people knew about it and it was coming up, but now you see coaches, there's analytic departments, and that is really cool to see. And yeah, definitely be going back to the spooky season of Halloween, it'd be really spooky if all these general managers were still stuck in their old ways of bringing back old guy or bringing back big players and trying to change the way the game is played, because it's changed since they've been in the league. And it's really good to see current coaches appreciating that.
It is Roger Shurgill. It is Josh Elliott Wolf for Sportsnet tonight, filling in for a vacationing Jamie Dodd with you for another 45 minutes time. We talked earlier about which numbers should be in the Hall of or in the Ring of Honor for the Canucks. We talked about who should be in the rafters for the Vancouver Canucks. We also dove a little bit deeper into, you know, what's scary about the Canucks and what scares you about the Canucks. I think those are two different questions, right? What's something that about the team that is something that is not necessarily something that's going to really be in benefit to them? And then on the other hand, what's something that really benefits them? And I know there's a lot of great responses to our text message inbox and on Twitter as well. And a lot of people agree with what you have to say when it comes to defense. Valid Sports Opinions on Twitter says, the true lack of a defense.
Well, he does have valid opinions, so.
Yes, because he agrees with you, apparently.
Yeah, of course. I guess that's, and obviously it's a tweet, but that might be a bit of an exaggeration. Like, look, the top four, I think, is going to be good. My main questions are with Edler and Myers, obviously, but if they're performing to the level they can perform, I don't think they're an issue. But it is the third pair that leaves you a bit exposed.
Well, and as you know, Faber mentioned this as well when we were talking to him. If there's an injury, who's coming up? Who's the next guy to play in that top four? Now, Troy Stetcher, I don't think that when he played on that top four, the Canucks were necessarily all that great. Like, I think when Tyler Myers missed time and it was Stetcher there, the Canucks very much missed Tyler Myers. He, despite what a lot of fans think, he's a guy who can eat some tough minutes, play a physical style of hockey, gets the puck out of his own team zone. And when you are missing, whether it's a Myers, whether it's an Alexander Edler, and at some point in the season, Josh, it's probably going to be a Quinn Hughes and a Nate Schmidt, who is that guy that can come in and play some tough minutes in the top four and not look out of place. And I don't know right now if there's a guy that can do that and not look out of place. It was tough for Troy Stetcher to do it, but with Stetcher, at least you had a little bit of trust. And not necessarily us, but the important thing was having that trust from Travis Green's mind.
Yeah, for sure. And it's going to be really interesting, especially in a shortened season where you're playing games closer to each other. There might even need be a need for, especially a guy like Alex Edler, like a rest day or two, you know? Workload maintenance, essentially. And
load management.
That's what I'm looking for, load management.
workload maintenance.
Workload
that
maintenance.
That would be, yes. Get that hashtag going.
Yeah, hashtag workload maintenance. But yeah, it's going to be tough for someone, especially because Jordy Benn, you know already, is not a top four defenseman.
Yes.
And Ilya Levy, Jalen Chatfield, Brogan Rafferty, and Jack Rathbone are like your next four options. And while all of those guys kind of have promise, they're not going to, barring something completely unexpected, they're not going to wow you in the lineup.
Yeah, especially not next season.
Exactly. Yeah, and so the lack of defense to an extent is worrisome, but it is more the depth that is the real concern.
Yeah, I definitely agree with you on that one. A couple more tweets to get to. Realtor Rod saying that their forwards, not named Bo, JT Miller, or Elias Pettersson, and their defense, not named Quinn Hughes, and their goaltending, says, so everything else is scary about the Canucks outside of, I guess, those four or five things. And, you know, to me, I guess I agree with that. Yeah, that scares me. That is scary that outside of a handful of guys on your top six, maybe a couple of guys on your bottom six, particularly guys like Adam Gaudette. I'm really excited to see what Jace Haerlich brings. I know a lot of people don't necessarily like this player based on last season, but I'm still a very big believer in Antoine Roussel's game. I think, and of course, Jake Virtanen, depending on where you peg him as a bottom sixer or a top sixer. I still think that there are some reliable players on that bottom six for the Canucks. The question is, can they keep their game steady enough and keep their head above water to really make a difference on the Canucks team? Now, for a guy like Gaudette, I think we all expect him to take a step next season. Now, 35 points or whatever he had, he was going to hit the 40-point threshold, was fantastic offensively, but his style of growth needs to be on the other side of the ice if Travis Green really wants to trust him or is really going to gain his trust. Because, you know, we peg Adam Gaudette in as that third-line center, and he's probably going to start there unless they were able to pick somebody else up. But is Travis Green really going to trust him in that spot? And that's a big issue because, yeah, you have Bo Horvat there that can take faceoffs for you in the defensive zone. You have JT Miller there as well. But if they're spending more time in the defensive zone taking faceoffs, that also to an extent takes away some of their options on the top end as well. And, you know, you would ideally, I think, from a defensive or from a coach's point of view, rather have a guy that is able to keep his head above water in a center ice position on the bottom six as a center.
Yeah, and with Gaudette, you either really need him to take a huge step offensively to a point where you're like, man, okay, he's not great defensively, but we'll take what we can get because he's scoring and setting up so much. And I think he's a good player. I don't think he has that in him, but the most likely thing that he has to do to guarantee ice time is round out that defensive game. And look, he doesn't have to be a Brandon Sutter or Jay Beagle defensively. He just has to be serviceable. And that's not a huge step that he has to take. And I think it's realistic to see next season.
And I think it's good to see that he has the offensive game already locked down, right? That's not something that you necessarily need to worry about. I think he's a player that shows jump in his game, that shows that he can actually make plays and drive plays. He's not a guy that's, you know, being the benefactor of other players around him that are better. A lot of the time, he is the guy that's creating the offense, the very little offense, from that bottom six. And that's, you know, counts for something, but does it count enough for him to be a long-term fixture as a third-line center, or is he better suited for the wing?
Yeah, and I think it will be interesting to see if Travis Green does maybe try him on Horvat's wing. I don't know how well that fit is, because Horvat does get some of the matchup roles, and like we said, Gaudette maybe isn't the best defensively, but he does. He also gets time on power play too, and we have this tweet from Douglas McDonald. The Canucks had one of the worst groups of bottom six forwards in the NHL, and it hasn't improved at all. That, barring a trade, Myers will be thrust into a top four role, and that after Gaudette and Vertanen, there's no other forward who can legitimately play on power play two. And I do agree with that to an extent. I mean, Pearson's there on the second power play. Schmidt is going to be there, and if you're rolling with Schmidt, Roussel, Vertanen, Gaudette, Pearson, that's not bad. Like, it's not great, but you're not.
It's not as, you know, great as it would be with Tyler Toffoli potentially, you know, there.
Yeah.
The thing is, the Canucks' first power play unit is so extremely dominant in terms of the personnel that's on there. The second power play unit very rarely needs to even see the ice, right? The Canucks' first unit is going to be on there for more than a minute on most cases, and the second power play unit just needs to go out there and create and generate some sort of offensive pressure. And obviously, if you score a goal, that's great, but they're not necessarily that important to the fact that they're going to be on the ice a whole lot. Now, here's where that sort of changes, is when the top unit doesn't do well. And we saw that in the playoffs as well. The top unit just take an absolute beating and not able to create any chances, and to the point where Travis Green started the second unit a couple of times. And, you know, those kinds of things are going to happen. And yes, in those situations, you wish that you had a second unit that was probably a little bit more offensively minded. But as you mentioned, that's why you have a guy like Pearson there. That's why you have a guy like Nate Schmidt there. You have Adam Gaudette. You have Jake Vertanen. And these guys that are, yeah, secondary players within your lineup. But hey, we're talking about a secondary power play unit anyways.
Yeah, it's a unit that's going to play 30 seconds after Pettersson, Miller, Besser, Horvat, and Hughes throw everything they have at the net. And to be fair, I did like the second unit's mindset last season. It was essentially like, oh, okay, boys, we got to go out there and shoot as much as we can in 30 seconds because that's all the time they gave us. And that's sometimes a good mindset to have on the power play, because sometimes it could get too cute and sometimes you maybe think too much. But yeah, that being said, it's the power play too isn't something that's going to make or break your team.
If you're wondering why I'm giggling, I just saw the Buff fumble on Sportsnet TV. Talking about scary. That was spooky.
Yeah.
That was spooky. You know, there is another thing about the Canucks from a more positive point of view that I think is going to scare other teams. I told you that I would get to it earlier on in the show. We weren't able to, but we will get to it on the other side of the break. Speaking of actual fears, though, Josh, we talked about it from a hockey point of view. We talked about it from a Canucks point of view. What is your actual biggest fear?
Man, mine is so dumb. So I went to Hawaii when I was probably like 16, 17, when I had a job in Kapaita Go with my friends. At the beach in Hawaii, there's generally lots of people, but there's also lots of sea turtles. And
Sea turtles.
Yeah. Wait for it. But I don't know why. My fear of sea turtles is the fact that they're just so slow on land, but in water, man, they're so fast. And they're huge. Like, sea turtles are as big as people, but they got big old shells. And man, and look, I wouldn't recommend anyone Google it, but if you Google the inside of a sea turtle's mouth, dude, it is scary. So yeah, it's as dumb as it sounds. It's sea turtles just get to me, and I don't know why.
Do you have nightmares about being in the water and then there's just this giant sea turtle chasing you?
Dude, yeah, like I think it also relates to the fact that I'm just not a good swimmer. Like, I can swim, but I can't swim fast. So,
and that's like a sea turtle specialty.
Yeah, I am prime dinner for a sea turtle. But yeah, man, they're just, and there's also a fine if you touch them. So I think I also had that fear in me that, like, oh, I'm accidentally going to touch it and I'm going to have to pay a bunch of money. So it hit me both in the wallet and mentally.
Sea turtles like wolves. Like Josh Elliott.
Yes, yeah. They're the main predator.
Exactly. My biggest fear, probably something that most people I would imagine can relate to, but it's like to a level that's probably not normal at my age. I don't like spiders at all. Like, if there's one on my desk right now, I would like leave the studio.
Oh, you're out, man. I used to live in a basement, and my girlfriend is very similar to you. I don't know if you want to take that as a compliment or not, as far as your fear of spiders goes. But so I was also afraid of spiders, and now I just kind of had to like get used to getting rid of spiders because there were so many in the basement. Because
it's your job.
Yeah, man.
She
ain't
doing
it. Man of the house. Gotta take care of spiders.
She's not doing it.
No.
Yeah. See, I would just simply leave.
I would just simply move.
Yes. Yeah. It was exactly. Find a new place. Find a new place. I'll get to the scariest part of the Vancouver Canucks for me on the other side of the break. And we'll maybe hear from some of the best interviews of Sportsnet 650 throughout the day as well. It is Raja Shergill alongside Josh Elliott Wolf here on Sportsnet tonight on Sportsnet 650.
Welcome back to Sportsnet Tonight with Jamie Dodd.
Final segment of the show. Sportsnet Tonight continues. It is Raja Shergill filling in for Jamie Dodd alongside Josh Elliott Wolf. It's been a jam-packed show this evening. We've spoken to Randeep Janda about some of the spookier things about the Vancouver Canucks on this pre-Halloween edition of Sportsnet Tonight. We spoke to Chris Faber about the Vancouver Canucks prospects. More importantly, we dove into a conversation about Vasily Podkolzin and what his lack of ice time means for his development and if it's something that the Canucks fans and the organization for Vancouver should be worried about. And if you missed any of the program, you can find it on sportsnet.ca/650. Just head on over to the Sportsnet Tonight show page. Follow us on Twitter at @share_Raja and at Josh Elliott Wolf.
Oof. Elliott Wolf J. Josh Elliott Wolf, I think, was...
Take it?
It was... I think it was either taken or it was too long.
Elliott Wolf J.
Yeah, Elliott Wolf J.
I looked at you, like, hoping to try and get that right. I should have thought of it. You don't have mine memorized. I don't have yours memorized. Do you have mine memorized?
I do.
Because you wrote the tweet today.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah.
That's why.
Yes.
That's why. @share_Raja, @ElliottWolfJ. Give us a follow on Twitter. And we talked all day about, you know, some of the scary things about the National Hockey League. And I want to get into one more thing as well. And we talked about it a little bit earlier on with Randeep as well. But, Josh, I want to speak, you know, with you about it. And it's scary to me, man, the fact that the Ontario Hockey League may be playing hockey, if we want to call it that, with no body checking.
Yeah, it's really tough, and I know Randeep talked about it a bit, but my whole thing is like, man, body checking in its purest form is just like a split-second thing where you make contact with the guy, but it kind of bounces off of you, and you're not that close to each other. the thing that would concern me most if I was a health official looking at the validity of hockey being a thing is guys getting pinned against the boards and being there for like 5 to 10 seconds while there's a puck battle, face-offs where your heads are next to each other, and there's just and on the bench you're sitting next to each other. There's just so much more.
And in the locker room. Yeah,
in the locker room. And like, are you going to patrol these guys and make sure they're not talking to the other team after the game too? Like, there's just so much more that they're not accounting for that it just doesn't really make sense to me.
I think putting the players on the ice in the first place, if you're that worried about COVID-19, and hey, listen, totally 100% that there's a pandemic and you need to be able to try and, you know, make the safest work environment anywhere you go, but also when it comes to playing a sport and, you know, playing it in the for these guys, for very young men. The fact of the matter, though, is you're shooting yourself in the foot by, you know, not allowing body checking and making it seem as if, okay, well, we solved the problem to COVID-19 on the Ontario Hockey League. There's no body checking. That's it. Everything is fine now. That's not true. It's actually kind of the opposite because, as you mentioned, everything else that has to do with, you know, trying to social distance and remain, you know, safe with everybody, like all that gets thrown out the window, Josh, as soon as you step foot onto the ice. And, you know, there are obviously, I'm sure, measures in place. Within the locker room, you're probably sitting a few feet apart. You know, you're obviously not sharing water bottles anymore. But when it comes to everything else, you're right there next to your teammates, the other team. I don't know how these guys are monitoring their bus. You're on the bus with the guys going from city to city. To me, body checking is the least of your worries.
Yeah, and like I said, there's so much more you would have to patrol just to make it even. Like, if you were like, okay, yeah, we're going to take out body checking, but literally any physical contact is not allowed, then I'd say that's way too much, but I'd also understand where they're coming from, and I'd be like, okay.
Well, I would say let's not play hockey anymore.
Yeah, exactly. I'd be like, okay, we're just not going to play hockey, but at least you gave reasonable guidelines. When you say, yeah, you can keep playing hockey, like, play hockey as you normally would, just don't body check each other. And also, you have to, like, figure out what the definition of a body check is. Like, is pinning someone against the board a body check? Or is it only if you go at them at a certain speed, you know?
Exactly. And, you know, there are so many elements that happen within the game that you just cannot sit there and tell me reasonably that body checking is going to fix the issue. Right? It just completely, to me, is wrong. And it's a fundamental part of playing hockey. And you're really, what you're doing from a pure hockey point of view, Josh, is taking away the ability for scouts to look at these guys properly. You're taking away a player who is perhaps a power forward or a grinder's ability to really play his game. And that guy might rely heavily on that style of hockey, right? You're taking away all of these sorts of things within the OHL when the actual problem isn't being solved. A better solution to me, and I'm not a health official, so, you know, take it with a grain of salt, but what would make a little bit more sense to me is if everybody were to wear fishbowls.
Yeah, for sure.
You know, and that's maybe not the answer, and perhaps somebody can, you know, come at me with that and say, well, that won't work because of this particular reason. But then, by that same token, you cannot sit there and tell me that body checking, by eliminating it, is going to work.
Yeah, for sure. And you look at the way, like, I kind of wish we asked Faber about this, but how can, and you mentioned it, how can some scout go to a game and see this big player that big players in junior leagues already had an advantage just based on their size. And now, without any physical play, they still have that advantage, but it might even be more for the bigger players because now they can just power their way to the net without fear of anything other than a stick check, right? And so it completely changes the way the game is supposed to be played. And like, look, I don't want to be the guy that's like, this is the game can't change is all, like, we need more fighting or hitting or whatever, because I don't think that, but I do think the game has found a balance, and it's good the way it is, but removing body checking is just, it takes it three steps too far in my book.
Exactly, and, you know, I'm a player, I'm a viewer and a lover of this game that, you know, has certain feelings towards how hockey should be played, and perhaps my view of thinking is a little bit more old school than maybe some of the people now. I do like the physical brand of hockey. I still do think, in my personal opinion, I know a lot of people might not agree with this anymore, is, you know, hockey, like fighting, needs to remain in hockey. And I feel like scrums and all of those emotional aspects that happen within the game is what makes the game what it is. It's what puts emotion into the game. It's what really separates a good game from a great game in some aspects, right? I mean, of course, scoring does that. And of course, when it comes to, you know, things like, you know, but like rivalries, for example, like we saw it with the Battle of Alberta was made simply because of how much physicality there was in those games. And I'm not saying that the OHL is necessarily going to get rid of that because, hey, you're just getting rid of body checking, but what if a player is crashing the net, runs into your goalie, and now a scrum ensues? Now what happens? Are you suspending everybody? Like, I think the gray area around this is too much. But there is one thing to really point out. It's that the Ontario Minister of Sport, Lisa McLeod, is the person who has put this order to the OHL. And pretty much gave them an ultimatum and said, this is the way that it's going to be played. If not, too bad. So you cannot put this necessarily on the OHL. I still think they're going to try and figure out exactly what to do and how they're going to move past this. And I don't know what the sort of they're going to have in terms of what solution they're going to have to really fix this issue, but it's, you know, it's going to be interesting. The tentative start date is February 4th, so they have a little than 100 days to try and figure this out. It is Roger Shergill. It is Josh Elliott Wolf. Sportsnet tonight continues for another 10 minutes or so. I mentioned, Josh, about the fact that the Canucks have a lot of things that will haunt other teams. And you gave me your answer as well. And your answer was the defense, and particularly the top four, particularly, I think, the top two, actually,
yeah,
with Quinn Hughes and Nate Schmidt.
Yeah, if the top two end up being Hughes and Schmidt, and they do end up playing together a lot, which is something I really want to see. We had, again, Chris Faber on earlier. He said he really wants to see that too. And I think that's a general consensus around Canuck Nation is, hey, these two skilled defensemen would probably play really well together. And yeah, that could be really intimidating for other teams when they have to deal with Schmidt and Hughes on the same pairing. And to an extent, you do want to split it up and spread the wealth a bit. But think about it, you're down a goal or two late and you need a goal. You're putting Hughes and Schmidt together because they're going to be able to create that. And that is going to be what's scary for other teams.
Yeah, and the Canucks this time around will actually have options, right? They can put Schmidt together with Hughes if they want to even protect the lead, and maybe put Quinn in that more of a defensive mindset that we hadn't played, right? It's all about that developmental curve, and this is probably potentially a player that could help Quinn Hughes in that regard as well. I want to get to my thing, I think, that is going to haunt other teams. That is similar to yours, because Quinn Hughes is part of it, but also the other guy that is part of it is Elias Pettersson. And that might seem a little obvious, but to me, what's different about it is the extra year of development, of maturity that both of these players are going to have, I think is going to do wonders. Is it possible, Josh, that Elias Pettersson, if it was a full 82-game schedule, which it's probably not going to be, but let's pretend as if it is it possible for him to put up 90 points next year?
Man, I think he could. I think he could eclipse 100.
Wow.
If
and that's my point, right? I think, like, that is because that he can hit 90 to 100 points, and maybe our expectations are too high.
Yeah.
Pella 650, 650. But regardless of that, my perspective here is that he can take a large step next season, going into his third year, a superstar centerman, as Elias Pettersson is. That's scary for other teams. Yeah. I think, you know, especially I think the jump from his rookie year to his second year is never expected too much. Yeah, you probably expected a little bit of a raise, which there was, and he did fantastic. And now, all of a sudden, what can we be in store for his third season? What can we expect from JT Miller, right? What can we expect from another year of Brock? And what can we expect from a sophomore campaign for Quinn Hughes? I think the thing that really should scare other teams is that all of these young guys on the Canucks, and hey, you can put Bo Horvat in that category too based on the playoffs that he just had. How much is this team really going to take steps forward in terms of their young players' development?
Yeah, and I don't want to be, when I say he could eclipse 100, it's like that's his like peak, and obviously it's not necessarily an expectation, but yeah, it's really going to be interesting to see, and I want to see how much his defensive game improves as well, because he's had spurts. Well, he's been strong defensively throughout his whole 2-year career, and obviously it's only been a bit, but when you're looking at a guy that's in his rookie year and a sophomore season, usually you don't expect much defensively, but he's been excellent and put in effort on both ends of the ice, Pettersson has. And look, when you mentioned Hughes, I do wonder if there's going to be a bigger jump for him too. And I don't know how much more he can provide offensively. I mean, he already completely revitalized the team on both the power play and just the defensive core in general. But you do wonder if he can take a step defensively, and maybe if he's playing with Schmidt or he's playing harder minutes without Tanev there, maybe he has to play a little bit more of that matchup role.
Yeah, and that in the entirety of things when it comes to the Canucks makes a huge difference, because all of a sudden it leaves room for guys like Horvat to play a little bit more offensive minutes then, and JT Miller as well. You don't have to rely on, you know, the same person always having to go out and take a defensive draw, because as we saw with the Canucks last year, it was always Bo or it was always JT Miller. And now you've got a guy that can you can trust in the defensive zone, especially to take faceoffs. Not that you didn't trust Pettersson before, because that's the top line, and of course you're going to start him no matter where the faceoff is. But the fact of the matter is, you know, especially from a faceoff point of view, this is a guy that adds another, element to his game and to his arsenal, and that's something to me that is going to be pretty scary. Roger Sherkill, Josh Elliott Wolf, it is Sportsnet tonight on a Halloween Eve edition of Sportsnet tonight. Final minutes here of Sportsnet tonight. We hope everybody has a safe Halloween tomorrow, however you are celebrating it. Finishing things off with a Monster Mash. And if you guys are trick-or-treating tomorrow with your kids or your cousins or whoever it might be, there's going to be a lot of great candy. So we're going to finish things off talking about the top five best candy.
Yes. So I'll start with my number five, and maybe we'll go back and forth.
Sure.
My number five. So, yeah, these are the candies. Like, trick-or-treating is obviously going to be different this year, but these are going to be the ones you want to take from your kids or your cousins or your siblings, however you're doing it. My number five.
I'll take my candy from you.
Thank you. I'll bring some. But, yeah, my number five is Snickers.
Snickers?
Yes.
Really?
Yeah, I don't.
So, I think we should establish this. You are definitely the chocolate guy. I do not. I have one chocolate on my list. Yeah, the rest is all sugar.
I don't even know if I would like count yours as
candy?
Chocolate-based. You know,
right,
what I mean?
Yeah, okay. It's not chocolate-based, I guess.
Yeah.
But this is, and it's also my number five.
Ooh, barely made it.
Everything else is all just sugar candy. But number five for me is Reese's Pieces.
That's a solid choice.
Yeah. I don't put, I haven't put
I would
it
put
there.
It above number five. Well.
Well, I mean, look at everything else I've got. By the way,
I don't like your list at all.
I know.
Man.
Hey, well, you know what? There was a, and this is my, you know, finest moment here working at Sportsnet. A few years ago, Randeep Janda, when he was still doing the show with, I think, Perry Solkowski at the time. Maybe it was Dan Riggio. I don't remember.
On Point.
I think it was On Point. Maybe it was Reach Deep. I don't remember. But they did a candy draft.
Yes.
It was actually Reach Deep. And they did a candy draft, and I took all the great candies. And I think I won.
Yeah, but you only pick candies, though. So
yeah, but
you won for yourself, but people were looking at your list, and they were like, nah.
Number four.
Yeah, my number four is very similar to Snickers, Mars.
Mars.
Yes.
I do. You know what? I'm not a chocolate guy. I'll admit that. But your list is solid, man. Like, if I had to get a Mars or the rest of those on your list, like, I would have them. I just wouldn't go to the vending machine and pick out a Mars bar or any Snickers bar or whatever it might be. If there's candy there, I would probably take it.
That's fair.
Number four for me is Cherry Blasters.
I don't even know what those are. Are those like the sour cherries?
Yeah, like the sour cherries are like red.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah.
Okay.
Those are really good. You know, I think these all might be from the same company. But they're all really good.
We got to get you a sponsorship.
Oh, I know.
What is it? It's, I don't remember. But yeah, I'm pretty sure they all are Maynard's. That's what
Maynard's,
it is.
I believe so, yeah.
My number three is Reese. Just the cups, though.
Just
Reese's
the cups.
Pieces are, they're good, but they're, I would rather have the cup.
Yeah. Okay.
Oh, okay. I got to get something off my chest, though. So when I was a kid, when you would get the Reese
trick-or-treating.
Yeah.
I like how I'm making fun of you. I'm only a year older.
You're like less than a year. But yeah, you would go out and you'd get the single pack of just one full-size cup. Now when they give it to you, it's one mini cup. So
yes.
It's like half the size.
I agree with you.
Like, what are you doing?
I have had this exact same problem before. And as much as I say that I don't like chocolate, I want my full big cup of Reese.
It was already just one cup. Why'd you gotta go down
size
from there?
Yeah, yeah. I don't get it. Number three for me will be Skittles.
That's a good choice. Marshawn Lynch.
Oh yeah, Marshawn Lynch. I like Skittles a lot. Taste the rainbow, man.
Yeah. I think I prefer the tropicals.
I like them all. You know what? I'm not a big fan of the sour ones, actually. The sour
right.
Skittles, but
yeah,
no,
those are too much.
I like the tropical ones. I like pretty much all of the regular ones. It's really, really high up there for me. It might even be number two.
Mm.
That's how close it is.
Speaking of two, my number two is Kit Kat. It's something
classic.
Yeah, it's classic. It's just pretty basic, but the wafer and snap it apart, man. It's a satisfying dish.
See, you know what? I would probably choose a Snickers bar or a Mars bar or a Reese over a Kit Kat.
That's
See, based on your list, and we'll get to number one, Kit Kat would be number five for me. If it was only your list.
Yeah, I guess that's fair. It's climbed the ranks for me lately.
Your
sure.
number one is really good, though. Number two for me is Sour Patch Kids.
Oh, that's tough, man. I would much rather have Reese's Pieces or Skittles over Sour Patch Kids.
Really? Yeah.
Yeah.
Well, you guys are all knowing, like, there's one pattern. They're all just sugar. They all pretty much taste the same with a little bit of a difference.
Yeah, they're just different designs.
Number one.
And finally, my number one Canadian classic, Coffee Crisp.
Yeah, that has to be number one.
Yes.
That has
so
to be number one.
Good,
it's really good, yeah. If I was, you know, doing your list, that would definitely be number one on mine as well. I think you have a pretty solid list, man. Like I said, I don't like chocolate that much, but I would definitely, you know.
I wish I could say the same about yours.
Yeah. And number one for me is my first round pick in the aforementioned candy draft a few years ago, Fuzzy Peaches.
That's a good one. Out of your list, that would probably be my number one as well, actually.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Fuzzy Peaches are delicious.
Yeah.
I think they're like a movie theater like staple,
yes,
too, right? They're always in the front. So are Sour Patch Kids, I guess, but
yeah.
I don't know. This is where, like, that's, you know, pre-COVID is where I had a lot of these snacks. I don't usually have a whole lot of candy or chocolate, but if it's chocolate bar, I'll be able to finish, like, one. I'll have one, you know? But if it's candy...
Pound through a whole
bag. Oh, man.
Yeah.
You better get that away from me. I am going to be eating on that all night. And perhaps... all of you guys will be too tomorrow night if you guys are going trick-or-treating. We hope you do so safely. It is unprecedented times that we are living in right now, but we hope that everybody is safe and everybody is healthy. And tomorrow night, please do so in a very healthy and very safe way as well. It has been Sportsnet Tonight. Thank you so much for sticking with us for the last 3 hours. We chatted about a whole bunch of different topics, including Todd Bertuzzi and how he should go into the Ring of Honor, if he should go into the Ring of Honor, where Roberto Luongo should go. Is it the ring? Is it the hall? Is it the rafters? Vasily Podkolzin was a tough topic. The OHL as well. If you missed any of the conversation that we had, please head on over to sportsnet.ca/650. I am Roger Shergill. He is Josh Elliott Wolf. This has been Sportsnet Tonight. It is on your home of the Vancouver Canucks, Sportsnet 650.